Welcome to another exciting broadcast day.
Well, 866-901-ADAM, 866-901-ADAM. Good morning, Teresa Strasser.
Good morning, Adam Carolla.
Good morning, Danny Bonaducci.
Good morning, Adam Carolla. Good morning, old Brian.
Hello.
Well, I guess there's not much to talk about except for yesterday's tragic event, at least at this point. Trying to think where to start. Well, first off, my thoughts as I was listening to this thing unfurl on the news. We had it up here on the TV set during the show yesterday with the sound down. But it's like I don't trust the news anymore because the news will say it just seems like most of the stuff I've heard come out from them has been erroneous or wrong for about the first 12 hours. So I just sit on it until you start getting the real story. Usually they go the other way. They exaggerate. As I was complaining a couple weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago, when that school bus filled with baseball players went off that overpass, it was reported for the first day, or at least the first half a day on CNN, these were little leaguers. Right. They kept saying little leaguers. Meanwhile, they're pulling 6'3", 210-pound college guys from the school, from the school bus, as well as duffel bags and stuff that must have said whatever college or university on them.
So, you know the steroid situation, though.
Yeah.
Right? It could have been little leaguers.
Well, how long are you going to stick with the little leaguer story before you upgrade them to college, especially since everyone is wearing something that has a university logo on it? So I don't trust the news. So we sat on it, and Teresa brought it up, but we didn't get that much into it. Well, this is one that got much worse.
Yeah.
This is one where it was just there were one dead and the campus was on, or two dead and the campus was locked down and they were looking for whatever. And then all of a sudden, I'm in my car and I'm driving home and there's 33 people dead, which is unbelievable.
It becomes the worst mass murder by gun in American history.
And I started thinking to myself, my first impulse is, I don't know why, but I think, oh, Christ, what the hell's everybody who's doing late night TV going to talk about? And I thought, right, what the hell's Kimmel going to do? He's going to go up there and do a monologue? Is he going to do jokes? I mean, obviously, you have to address this. On the other hand, you don't want to make the entire show about it. On the other hand, it seems weird to be telling Al Gore fat jokes heels of this. And then I thought, wait a minute, I have to do a show.
Right.
What am I going to do? And then I thought, this is what I love about radio, is you can sit here and then you can have this conversation. There's nothing on a cue card. There's nothing to write. There's no monologue to deliver. We can have a real experience. We can have some laughs. We can shed some tears. We can talk about our feelings. We can hear what you have to say about it. It's a nice forum. You don't get that in other places, you know. If you work for a newspaper, you just write an article about this. And if you do monologues, you have to somehow work this into your monologue, although you certainly can't tell a joke about it. And if you write a sitcom, you pretend it never happened and just write another one about somebody being confused about some secret admirer when they're really planning the birthday party for the bride. So we get to discuss openly and talk about our feelings about this and share insights and then discuss possibilities for the future. First off, it's horrifying. I've thought many times, as far as the next big terrorist move, this would seem like the way to go. This time's 100 schools.
Right.
Just get 100 sleeper cell guys, synchronize your watch, put them in much body armor as they can handle, and you go to UCLA and I'll go to USC and you head to San Diego right. State and we'll just keep going times 100 colleges. This would seem like the biggest, the most terror that you could strike into this country. Why it never seems to happen, at least from a terrorist standpoint, seems peculiar to me. I don't necessarily say it will happen, but it makes me think maybe there's not as many sleeper cells as we had originally anticipated. But when you hear about a situation like this happening, your first thing is, what do we do? As human beings, and especially as human beings who are living in a society where we no longer have to worry about where our next meal's coming from, we no longer have to worry about being killed by tuberculosis or the plague or whatever. We don't have that much to worry about. I mean, we live in a society with a seatbelt and an airbag and climate control and alarm systems and frontal impact crush zones in our cars. We're in pretty good shape, but when something like this comes around, we feel very vulnerable. All of a sudden, we feel probably how our ancestors felt who were sleeping on a cave floor, which is, we could die tomorrow. It's a weird feeling that human beings probably used to have and don't have anymore, but once in a while, an event like this brings it back. And that's why we have all that talk. Oh, it could happen to any of us. If it could happen here, it could happen anywhere. Nobody is safe. You'll always hear them talk this way whenever one of these tragedies takes place.
Do you feel that way?
No, I don't, because for me...
Because I don't either. And I've been questioned about that before by people after 9/11, when it was okay to talk about it a little more casually, conversationally. I said, that just won't happen to me. That's not the way, you know, I just don't see in a million years. So I don't personally feel less safe, but I think America is less safe.
Well, it's like any event, really, here in the United States, which is we don't have ferry boats turning over and killing 600 people because they're overloaded and outdated. You know, we don't have mass tragedy like that, or we rarely have mass tragedy like that, because we've constructed a society where we have building codes and we have police officers and we have everything everywhere, and that stuff really just doesn't go down. But it can, and of course your kid is safe, and of course you're safe, and I don't think there's anything we can do about it, and I think that freaks people out. I think everyone wants to know why, and the answer is, we don't know why. Yeah. We'll never know why. The second question is, what do we do to keep our kids safe, or what do we do to keep us safe? Answer, nothing. This is a freak occurrence. I don't know what the hell you could have done. And I'm surprised, quite honestly, when these things happen, that they don't happen more. If you think about the amount of sort of screwed up, disgruntled, chemically altered people there are floating around the society. I mean, everybody knows somebody that's screwed up, and you do that times 300 million people, and you have quite a few screwed up people floating around out there.
Yeah.
There's nobody who doesn't have access to firearms these days. So you take this, and it's a weird equation. It's like on the bottom left-hand side of the pyramid, you have a huge group of whacked-out people. On the right-hand bottom of the pyramid, you have millions and millions and millions of guns being sold at auctions, being sold at flea markets, being sold, you know, by eBay, being sold. And then at the top of the pyramid, you have a very small amount of isolated incidents where people do these sorts of things.
Right, you have the Unabomber.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It seems like, you know, when people go, this tragedy doesn't make sense, I always quietly think to myself, I would assume that if you just pulled me aside and you said, look, you may not know anything about these people called the Earthlings, but there's two guns for every one of these Americans floating around out there, and everyone seems to be on Xanax or booze or whatever,
right,
and everyone would like to see their boss dead or their ex-wife dead, and everyone seems like they're afraid, and everyone knows somebody who has a kid who's a little bit nutty, or someone who's in rehab, or someone who had a behavioral problem, whatever. I would say, well, someone's going to walk into work and shoot it up every single day. Someone's going to walk on a campus and shoot it up every single day. With the amount of campuses and the amount of job places and the amount of fill in the blanks, this is going to happen every day. And yet it's rare. It's very rare, well, which is weird to me.
It takes a very special, because you've mentioned there's people who are mentally screwed up, people on copious amounts of chemicals. Everybody has access to guns. I fall into all of those categories.
Yes.
And I'm not trying to make light of anything. According to a battery of doctors, right, I am bipolar and therefore need to take lithium and Lamictal and something else, which I haven't in years, so be very careful. But the fact of the matter is, that's a fact, if these guys are right.
Mm-hmm.
Second, I have access to all the guns in the world. Mm-hmm. Third, let's see, we've got the mental, and I've taken tons and tons and tons of chemicals.
Right.
I also, and I don't want to say what year, it could have been back in the 50s, I worked with someone I hated so bad, I just didn't want them dead. Mm. I wanted disease to eat their flesh right in front of me.
Wow.
I hated this, and everybody did. This was the worst human being anybody I know, when we talk about it, had personally met in their whole life.
Hold on, Brian, don't give them that satisfaction, buddy. Stay strong. Stay strong.
Brian can hear you, Danny.
So, every day, people would make some kind of joke about coming in and shooting this person in the head, and there was a pool about who'd shoot this person first. I mean, everybody hated this person, and not a kind of hate, a passionate hate, where it consumed you at 2 in the morning.
Right.
That you had to see this person again and you'd sweat. I mean, this is horrible. And I never shot this person.
Uh-huh.
And neither did anybody else. And I fit into all the categories that you just mentioned. So there's something else that makes one person go and 299 million point whatever not go.
I think there's a confluence of factors. I mean, what you're talking about, yes, and in many of these cases, there's some incident that happens that takes the person over the edge. And I thought, Adam, it was interesting you mentioned that this doesn't happen more on college campuses, because I think most mental illnesses begin to manifest themselves right at college age.
Mm-hmm. You gotta skip that, you'd all be dead.
Schizophrenia starts to kick in somewhere in 1920, something like that. Are you talking about Rachel Perry, by the way? Just nod your head.
I like Rachel. People know.
Oh, okay. I can't think of. All right. Point is, yeah, don't get me wrong, I'm glad it doesn't happen more often. It's just, it happens, and it happens every few years, it seems. There was the Amish school shooting and all that stuff. Also, then it brings up a whole bunch of other points, which is, well, now all the gun nuts come out of the woodwork, pro and con.
Yeah.
I used to be very anti-gun. I'm still no fan of guns, although I am willing to admit, and I think everyone should, that these things happen in gun-free zones. They don't happen over on the Nugent Ranch. They don't happen at Hell's Angel bars, because you start shooting and next thing you know, you're being shot.
Right.
There's a part of me that kind of likes the Hell's Angel bar aspect of it.
Right.
We always do that thing where, hey, man, if people have guns, then they're just going to be standing around twirling them around and shooting innocent people in the face by mistake or throwing the gun at people. Then they get into this weird thing about training and this and that. I feel like I went down to the Hawthorne Police Department, the SWAT team, once for a man show bit, and I fired everything they had. I fired the pistols, I fired the Tech Nines, I fired full automatic machine guns, I fired shotguns, I fired everything they had. They handed them to me out on the range, and they said, here you go. Here's how you hold it. Now go sick. And I fired the thing, and I hit the head of the target from 50 feet away every time, and it felt like, yeah, this feels good. This feels exactly right. This feels exactly. Never fired a gun before. Fired every gun. No problemo. So how much training does it really take? I mean, don't you feel like a firearms instructor could take your average able-bodied 22-year-old law enforcement, whoever, and take them over to a range and spend a couple hours with them and go, this is how it works? I mean,
I was an armed security guard. I passed that test and with excellent marks.
We gave
me a gun.
We get really nutty about it, but it's one of, and everyone just nods their head. But if you can learn to drive a car, I think you can handle a gun. Now there's more responsibility with the gun, or maybe not. I mean, maybe the car hops the curb and runs over three people. Either way, I wouldn't mind some people floating around with a piece on them, and I don't want them in a crappy uniform either. I like the air marshal idea.
Me too.
Now, here's how the air marshal thing works. The air marshal thing works in that we have a couple of guys, and they get on flights, and we don't tell Al-Qaeda what flights they're going to be on, and we don't dress them as air marshals. We dress them as businessmen. Although, when I had a guy sitting next to me in first class who didn't look like one of us, I asked him two questions, and eventually he just went, I'm an air marshal, be quiet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the guys don't have a great rap, and I think he knew me. You know, it's like, hey, what do you do for a living, buddy? A little this, a little that. Huh? And I'm just checking the guy out, and it's funny. I'm doing my profiling. Like, he's wearing the right pants, but he's got the wrong socks on. He looks uncomfortable in this jacket and button-down shirt. I think this guy's no business traveler.
Awful lot of honkies in here.
That's right. About 2.5 questions in, he goes, oh, I'm an air marshal. But he must have recognized me as the guy from the man show's probably not going to try to take over the airplane. But the thing that works as far as air marshals go is not the air marshals. It's letting the bad guys know that you don't know where these guys are.
Right. It's a deterrent. Right.
They may be on your plane. They're probably not on your plane, but do you want to take that chance? And then if you're going to make a plan to take over the plane, you better factor that part in.
I've thought about that a lot. The people that did not, compared to the one plane that did, when the terrorists went, they made, hey, they're guys. There's six guys with box cutters.
Right.
Now, unless you get, I mean, it's no reason to get all graphic and off subject. Box cutter blade, when fully extended, will break off. You can only extend because they come in little. You obviously know this, they come in little sections of razor.
Well, there's a few different kinds: utility knife, box knife, utility, razor, whatever it is, sticks out about 3/4 of an inch.
Okay,
and it would be your weapon of choice for your opponent to have if given the choice between knife, club, gun, stick. You'd hope they had a box cutter.
I would take a stick the size of a policeman's billy club, the old style billy club, not the PR-24 that they carry now.
Right.
I would take a stick over almost anything that didn't fire.
Right.
A box cutter would not stand a chance against the guy with a stick.
Right, and they rose up.
I don't know how they finally got the guts to get the message to enough people that got the message back, okay, I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if I want to say this. If they had known in advance the inevitability of death, I think every one of those planes could have not crashed.
Yes, yes. We were caught by surprise, and now we know, and we thought it was a thing where they were just going to land in Beirut.
Between, and I don't mean me and Adam, the show, look at us, be interesting. I mean men of our size and attitudes, and we got four other guys, and there's six guys with box cutters. The six of us without box cutters could have done enough damage while the other guys, everybody then went, look, there's some dude. Quick, jump on.
Well, my feeling, and we need to take a break because I got some news for you kiddies, is overall, instead of metal detectors everywhere, instead of everyone going to school in their underpants or staying at home and doing it online, take a few air marshals and have them floating around. I'm fine with that.
Right.
And if I have a kid who's attending that university, one semi-trained guy with a 9mm floating around in a Letterman jacket, I will take. Yep. I'm not worried about my kid getting shot by that guy. Coming up, we have well, it's Jamal Albar Gowty.
He took the cell phone footage,
who
right?
took the cell phone footage outside Virginia Tech building. You can hear the gunshots on this being played all over the news. We're going to have him on the show. What the hell is that? Sounds like somebody picked up the phone.
Apparently, yes. I also have the clip. We can save it for later or do it now. The cell phone audio.
I think everyone's familiar with that. So we'll take a break. We'll hear the clip, and then we'll talk to Jamal, who is actually on the scene next on the Adam Carolla Show.
Hey, Adam Carolla is putting two people behind bars at Alcatraz Island for one night. Think you got what it takes to survive a little sleepover? Go to AdamCarolla.com and tell us why you should be sentenced. If you're chosen, you got a chance to compete for $2,500. Details at AdamCarolla.com and your accommodations at Alcatraz, courtesy of The Condemned, starring Steve Austin in theaters April 27th. Let's get back to the Ace Man on the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, I hope I pronounce this right. Jamal Albar Gowty, I believe, is how it's pronounced, is on the phone. Jamal?
Hello?
Hello. Is it Albar Gowty?
Albar Gowty is good enough, Adam.
Good enough. So, Jamal, you're a student. You're a civil engineer major.
Yes, sir, I am.
Virginia Tech. And it is your cell phone video that's all over the news.
It is.
So tell us, first off, thank you for coming on the show on such short notice and under such tragic circumstances.
My pleasure, Adam.
You walk us through how this went down. Where are you when the shooting occurs?
I was trying to leave Baden Hall. I head to campus trying to talk to my advisor, but then...
Now, what time is this?
10 to 10.
This is 10 to 10 in the a.m.
In the a.m.
And you're leaving the hall where the shooting took place?
No, actually, I was trying to go to a hall next to where the shooting took place.
Mm-hmm.
But then someone started shouting and asking us to leave the ground and clear campus. Mm-hmm. So I had to head back to my car. To head back to my car, I had to pass by Norris Hall, where all the shooting took place.
Mm-hmm.
So while passing by there, I saw some cops running. They didn't know where to go. They just heard some gunshots on campus, but didn't know what building they came from. And one of them drew his gun. So I knew that something serious, very serious, is going on. I took my camera and started shooting.
Mm-hmm.
A person in Norris Hall told them that the gunshots, he was on the second level at Norris Hall.
Mm-hmm.
So he told them that the gunshots were in Norris Hall. They went there, tried to rush into the building, and I was shooting them while they were trying to get into that building.
Now, that was the cops, trying to rush into the building at Norris Hall.
The thing I was going to ask was, I'll take my six-year-old to Chuck E. Cheese for his birthday. I went last night to an award show, and I always go, when I get home, I had a camera in my phone the whole time, and I forgot.
Mm-hmm.
With bullets whizzing by your head, what gave you the peace of the calmness to go, hey, I have a camera, let me get some of this? How are you not just laying on the floor wetting yourself?
Oh, well, I don't think I would be wetting myself. I'm not a person. It happens to me all the time. You know, after something happened, you would say, shoot, I had a camera. Why
right.
didn't I use it?
Right. So you're out. Now, you're outside. You're out on the lawn at this point, right?
Yes, sir.
Right. And I'm just judging from seeing the footage. I think we have
a
clip. If Brian will wake up, we will play a clip. It's the one that's been played over and over again on the news. Those are the shots being fired. So the cops that ran past you with the guns drawn, who are then trying to make it into the building, do they make it into the building or were the doors chained up?
Well, this is one of the theories, that the doors were chained. You would hear a boom at the end of the video.
Mm-hmm.
The reason is either they were trying to get into the building and it was chained up, so they had to use some kind of explosives to open the door, or that maybe they just opened the door and threw in a tear bomb or a gas bomb or something like that.
Well, Jamal, and by the way, we're speaking with Jamal, and I'll try to do it again.
Al Berguti,
yeah. Who's an engineering student over at Virginia Tech. He's the guy who took the video that's all over the television set. Did you know any of the people that were victims?
Not personally, but I've met some of them, and it's really horrible. It's really, really a sad tragedy. Yesterday, I got to see the parents of an 18-year-old girl that got executed in this thing. The killer just shot her in her head.
Oh. And at any time, where are you from? Where's your country of origin?
Canada.
West Bank, Palestine.
The West Bank. Mm-hmm. So you're a Palestinian,
yes,
and you're on
sir.
A campus, and guns are shooting, and you're standing in the middle of it. At any point did you think, hey, man, these cops are going to look at the Palestinian and get nervous? Did that ever enter your mind?
No. Remember, it happened in 1 minute. Cops were nervous, but probably for my own safety. They were trying to make me leave the shooting area.
Yeah, that actually makes me feel really good, because I would have thought, if I was a Palestinian and there were guns were firing anywhere, I'd go, somebody's going to think I did this. Somebody's going to think my country's doing some attack. I'm darker than they are. I got to take cover.
You think?
Well, no, I don't think. I would hope not, but the facts
are that
we're a nervous country right now.
I do. People thought it was a terrorist attack or assumed it was a terrorist attack.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to process all this information. I imagine you are as well, Jamal. So what's next for you? What do you do? Do you go back to school? Do you take some time off? I mean, how do they do it? And do they take that building and demolish it? I mean, if this happened in a schoolhouse, they would demolish the schoolhouse. If this happened in a private home, they would probably demolish the home.
Right.
What do you do with an entire building? I mean,
I don't know. We
do oftentimes sort of take whatever, wherever the tragedy took place, we'll take it down to the ground.
Sharon Tate House no longer exists.
Right.
And the address. Luby's was closed. The restaurant.
Right.
The address has actually been physically changed. That address does not even exist anymore.
Yeah, we will do that. But when you have an entire building, what do you do with the entire building?
I don't mean to sound trite, but I'm guessing they spackle and paint and clean and open classes.
Well, reports are it's going to be closed for the rest of the semester. After that, I don't know. Jamal, I'm curious. I know there are some makeshift memorials that have gone up around campus. Can you describe that to us?
Well, I actually don't have any information about that. What I heard is that probably President Bush will be dropping by to Blacksburg to join the memorial services in here. It's going to be really busy, especially if he did come. So
yes.
It's probably going to be around 2 p.m. today.
Is there anything about that being so close to it? Is there anything about the shooter that you know that we don't know? Or do you get all your information from the news just as we do?
Just as you do.
I should say now that a gunman has been positively identified. We'll get to that in a moment. But ABC News and among others is reporting that it was a Korean national, some say 23, some say 24 year old. Apparently, he was carrying what they're calling a disturbing note on his person before killing the two people in the dorm, and then obviously going on to or allegedly going on to Norris Hall, where Jamal was able to capture this on cell phone.
Jamal, do you think, and I know this is a question that keeps being asked over and over, that the campus security did enough or the administration did enough? Should they have closed the campus? Could they have closed the campus? Do you feel like any of this could have been avoided if after they discovered the first two bodies in the dorm, they would have snapped into action?
Well, you have to really listen to what they have to say. It's easy for us to be saying what they should have done, because right now we know all the facts, but I'm sure that the police did what they thought was the best for Blacksburg and for Virginia Tech students.
Yes. All I do, by the way, is I put myself in the same position they're in, and then I can't judge, because I would have been on the first scene saying, close down the entire campus.
Right. A guy got angry.
This guy's in a car. He's in a Pontiac, and he's speeding in the opposite direction as we speak. As a matter of fact, the longer we stand around here, the further he gets away from here. That's what I would have assumed. Jamal, have you spoken to your parents back in Beirut?
Well, they live in Saudi Arabia. Yes, I did talk to them.
Uh-huh. Did they see it on the news? Did they catch it before you caught them?
Yeah, they did. But they saw my name, and they knew that I took the video, so they knew kind of that I'm okay.
Wow.
I think this answer might surprise everybody, but I've asked this question a couple of times of other people, not in any kind of circumstance like this. Did your parents say... And you're Palestinian, and you're from Palestine, where the world is focused right now. Did your parents say to you, I told you America's dangerous, don't go there?
We all know that Blacksburg is a safe place. My parents actually have came here.
Blacksburg, America in general. Because I know people from foreign countries that think, we just start shooting at you the second you get off the plane. Did your parents say America's dangerous?
Bunch of Korean cowboys, that's what we're known as.
They never mentioned that. We know. They came here. They know. They saw Blacksburg. And I'm sure they know this is an isolated incident.
Right.
I have faith. I really love this town. I really love Blacksburg. And I'm sure it's a really safe place. We don't lock our doors in here. We don't lock our cars. You can just keep them open. This is an isolated incident. I wouldn't ever say that Blacksburg is not a safe place to stay in.
A positive note to go out on, Jamal. We appreciate you making time for us this morning.
Yes, thank you.
And now you must be besieged with offers to talk on TV shows and radio shows and all. How did we get you to talk onto our show?
How did you get me?
Yes.
You called my phone.
That was it, huh?
That was it.
All right. Well, thank you, Jamal.
Thank you.
Sure.
Take care of yourself.
I don't think he quite understood my question. He thought it was...
No, I know.
Probably.
I think I think he sort of did, which is, it is true, around the world, they think that we're a bunch of cowboys.
Yeah, in Beirut, they think America's dangerous.
Everyone has a gun. Well, it strikes me that there was some video that we'll never see now because of this tragedy, but a day or so ago, they had some video out of Germany where they were training these soldiers to shoot, and the guy was saying racist things about black gangsters and this and that and the other. And I thought, that's not right. And then on the other hand, I thought, well, if that's all we export, I mean, if all we export to these different countries are these gangster movies and gangster rappers and whatever, then that's what that country will think of us.
If they're getting it off,
or that group of us,
they're thinking, shoot anybody of a darker color that looks suspicious, unless they look like Ray Charles, then it's Jamie Foxx.
Yeah, this is why, switching subjects a little bit here, that they talk about the brothers not being able to get a cab ride, which is the guys who are driving the cabs are all from different parts of the world, and those parts of the world have been fed a steady diet of rap videos, and they think, oh, my God, these guys are all criminals.
Right.
We don't feed them a diet of black doctors and black attorneys and black dentists and black businessmen. That doesn't make it outside of our borders. The stuff that makes it outside are athletes and thugs, and that freaks out the rest of the country, and they come in here and they think it's just going to be a big shooting range.
Right, that's true, but I when I lived in New York City, and I stayed out very late and played very hard in New York City,
Danny?
And have seen up close and personal with a black buddy of mine, that one day we wanted to go somewhere and do stuff, and he said, we'll never get a cab. You have to get a cab, and when you open the door, then I'll just come over there and jump in.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what? And so I did it. And the first cab pulls over, and I open the door, and he comes up, and the cab takes off with the door in my hand.
Maybe you recognize Bonaducci.
Yeah, this is a bad call. But seriously, I've been a part of that, where black guys can't get a cab after dark in a lot of New York City.
And by the way, Danny, what he calls his black buddy, is just a regular white guy. It's just Danny's so white, it's all relative. I'm considered Lucius, one of his black buddies.
Yes.
Anyone who's been in the sun is one of his black buddies.
Please refrain from using ethnic slurs.
All righty, we need to take a break. I would like to keep going with this topic. I just don't feel like talking about anything else.
There is more news coming out, and we can discuss it when we come back.
Yes, because I do feel like I'm behind a little bit on the news. So Teresa will get us caught up with that. And you, 866-901-ADAM, can call us and tell us what you're feeling, what your solutions are, what your thoughts are. Has anything like this or even close to this ever happened to you? Or do you know anyone it's ever happened to? Share. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Here's what's coming up this morning on the Adam Carolla Show with Program Director Jack Silver.
Hello, this is Jack Silver. Is Juice Newton available? I see. Well, do you happen to have the number for the McDonald's on Sunset? Oh, hey, well, peeps, Jack Man's just trying to win the $10,000 for Outbook August. From Sons of Hollywood, Sean Stewart, we'll do some gay walking, Angel Adam and Devil Danny, and Celebrity Dirk with Perez Hilton. Wow, a gay blogger and Rod Stewart's kid. A real embarrassment of riches. Nuts!
Here's Adam Carolla with Teresa Strasser and Danny Bonaducci on the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, because it doesn't seem right to talk about anything else at this stage, we're going to keep on keeping on about this tragedy at Virginia Tech. Teresa, you have some more news.
Yeah, this from ABC. They are saying that they have confirmation on the shooter. He is was a South Korean national and a Virginia Tech senior. He is being identified as a man who killed two people in the dorm room, returned to his own dorm room, rearmed, left what they're calling a disturbing note before entering a classroom building on the other side of campus where he continued his rampage.
By the way, if you have opinions on this, our phone numbers are 1-866-901-ADAM. Once again, it's 1-866-901-ADAM. You know what? It's funny because in today's racial tension, especially with what happened with IMIS and other things, you're not allowed to say anything bad about any race, but I'm wondering if you're allowed to say anything good about a specific race of people.
Well, not unless it, if it makes me feel bad about my race, you can't do it.
It's just that when you hear a South Korean national, you think, God, you never hear that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a guy from Seoul opened fire in America. You never hear that.
No, although I've said 1,000 times the Koreans are the meanest people on the planet.
Because I just don't like kimchi.
They're war-torn, and I just remember it well. I just
the DMZ's a bad spot at the 37th parallel.
I remember during the L.A. riots 15 years ago, the Koreans, everyone else started fleeing for higher ground when the city was being lit on fire. The Koreans went to the roof of the liquor store, got the 30-06 out, and started shooting at anybody that came near their liquor store. And I remember thinking, I like that.
Yep, me too. I also saw a story on the same thing where people started writing black-owned on their businesses.
Mm.
And this Korean store owner and a black store owner that worked together side by side for years, the black guy went over to the Korean guy's store and wrote black-owned on his window.
Mm.
And I thought that was really touching. You know, because this is all about race and all about tension. And a black dude goes over and puts black owned on a Korean guy's business and stands in front of it.
I wrote it on my wallet. I wrote it on every tool I had. I wrote it on my ass. I wrote black owned. You can still see.
I was in Australia.
I wrote it on my cat. I wrote it on a can of Dinty Moore stew I had in the cupboard. I wrote it on everything. Valerie.
Yes.
You're calling from Las Vegas. You say you have a friend that died in Columbine?
Yes. Rachel Scott was a friend of mine.
And what happened? And were you attending Columbine at the time?
No, I wasn't attending Columbine. I actually went to a school that was down the street, Dakota Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was she was a part of a play that was put on April 1st and April 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
And my boyfriend at the time had written the play. And it was actually a student-run, student-written play, and she played the main character, and which was written after me. And so he wanted me to help with the casting and with, you know, makeup and production and all that. And that's how I met Rachel.
And obviously, this must have been heartbreaking for you. Now, you're older. You're not a contemporary of hers. You're an adult.
I'm sorry?
You're an adult.
Yes.
Well, you're an adult now, or how were you her? Because I didn't fully understand.
Well, your boyfriend wrote the play, and you helped. So, were you an adult at the time?
No, I was 17.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's in a high school down the street.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I heard that part, and then when I heard your boyfriend wrote the play and you helped, I thought somehow you were an adult. But
student-run play.
Student-run play.
Have you been in Hollywood long enough? They write plays at 4.
I guess so. Now, so this must have freaked you out, but good, at age 17. What were the feelings you had about it?
Well, when I first found out, actually, I was going down. Well, I used to go down there during my lunches, and I had actually, ironically, gotten kicked out a week before when they figured out that I wasn't a student, and they kicked me out, not letting me explain that I was a part of the play, that I was helping with the website, that, you know, I knew a lot of the teachers there, let me explain, and they kicked me out. So I stopped going back there during my lunches, and the day that it happened, I was going to lunch, and I just thought that, you know, it was 4:20, and there was a bunch of cops going down the street, so they got to be busting people at Clement Park. And when I got back from lunch, they were rushing me into the school. And there was pretty much teachers at all of the different entrances to the school.
I was just chiming in to ask what you're doing now and how this has affected you. And would you let your kids go to a public school, or are you thoroughly freaked out and you're going to homeschool them, or how does this work?
I'm thoroughly freaked out, and I'm probably going to homeschool them.
Really?
Yeah.
Right. That never would occur to me, but then I didn't live down the street.
But the reality is, I mean, look, there's a higher likelihood of them drowning in your pool when you're homeschooling them than them being shot in a Columbine-type situation.
It doesn't. They tell my wife every time that she is almost escorted off planes for freaking out, you have a better chance of being struck by lightning, and she doesn't care. What? She's just afraid.
I'd be interested, Valerie, how do you feel about guns?
I do not like guns at all. I don't even know, like, the whole problem with it, I don't even know where to begin. I don't think there's anything that we can really do to stop it. As long as they exist, there's always going to be a problem.
I agree. Thank you, Valerie, by the way, for calling in, and take care of yourself.
I will.
Thanks, Valerie. Yeah. There's an interesting thing about that with the gun question, because guns are intrinsically, well, not intrinsically, but let's say certainly in this case, if this guy hadn't had a gun, none of this would have happened. That's for sure. On the other hand, if we are a savage enough society to do such things without guns, we are the survival of the fittest. Just the bigger guy gets whatever he wants. If you're going to be savage enough to shoot people, then you're a savage enough society to just win by sheer size and strength, which means women lose everything. You know, they are now completely unprotected physically, and then smaller guys and guys your size and bigger rule the earth.
Yeah, I mean,
that's my legitimate position on that. I'm not sure if I'm pro or con gun, but I am pro or con that violence exists.
You're pro time machine. I think that, and then I'll let you speak, Teresa. I think the thing about guns is we need to treat them. I don't know why, but I'm thinking of cars. I always think of cars.
Yes, you do.
There was a while, there was a time when everyone just got a car and everyone just did what they wanted. You drove how fast you wanted to drive. We didn't have stoplights. We didn't have airbags. We didn't have seatbelts. And people started getting hurt. And we realized, yeah, these cars are useful and they serve a purpose. On the other hand, they can be dangerous because people are driving drunk and people aren't wearing seatbelts and the cars aren't very safe. And hell, this steering wheel's got a big horn in the middle of it that looks like it's going to go into my chest if I get into an accident, so on and so forth.
My 67's wheel is about 3 feet across and there's 6 inches of play that you can turn the wheel either direction and nothing happens.
Yes, he's more of a skipper than he is a driver.
Exactly.
The point is somebody said, okay, we're not going to do away with cars. Let's try to figure out how to make them safer. Let's have airbags. Let's make sure you can get a license to drive one. If we see you swerving and you're drunk, we'll take away that license. We did a whole bunch of things. And you know what? Less people died because of it.
Absolutely.
Does it mean that someone doesn't get drunk and hops a curb and kills somebody every once in a while? Sure, it happens all the time. We just realized we're realistic. We said we're not going to get rid of this. It's a necessary evil, if you will. Now let's deal with it. And I feel like we've been trying to do that with guns. The problem is the NRA says no. And we say, but all we want is some registration. No. And I'll tell you why the NRA does that. They're worried about the slippery slope aspect of it.
As I said, in some cases, people should be.
As I said many times, that's what happened with smokers. 15 years ago, you were smoking on airplanes, and people said, we're going to make a section for you over here, and everyone went over there. And then they said, you know what? No more smoking even in your smoking section. You smoke in the airport. And then we went, no more smoking in the airport. We'll put you in this glass cage and you can smoke there. And then we said, you know what? Nah, we're going to get rid of the cage. You can smoke outside. And then what happened is we said, you know what? We're going to need you to move down the street.
Right.
And then we said, you know what? This street is paid for by taxpayers. Go to the park.
Now Danny's got to wear a smoking helmet.
Now Danny has to don the smoking helmet.
That's
because
a years-old helmet. They've gotten crazier in the last few years.
Because of the slippery slope. Now, what the NRA does, the equivalent to that is 20 years ago when they said to the guys, hey, you guys in the airplane, we need you to go to the smoking section. They went, no. No can do. And they said, well, we think this is important. They said, well, we're going to get some lobbyists and then we're going to fight it out and we're going to drag our feet. And 20 years from now, we'll still be arguing over whether we should go to a smoking section in an airplane or not. That's what the NRA does because they're so scared that eventually someone is going to take their guns. They argue over everything and you never can get to the real point.
Right.
They drag their feet on every single issue and we never get to it.
It's RICO in reverse. It covers everything. They can argue from the word hello.
Yes. And by the way, RICO in reverse is what a board op bill was doing last night. It's a move. Jack Silver said, we can't talk about the RICO in reverse.
It's
Don't
dangerous.
Get me started in what color that bandana is. But if you're RICO in reverse,
wow, you're somebody special.
Yes.
And man, do you have dexterity?
Yeah. That's how the code works. You go, are you RICO? And the guy goes, no, I'm reverse. And they go, come with me.
Reverse RICO. Double jointed?
Yeah. The thing is I would like the part, obviously, where people got licensed and registered. I like the waiting periods. I even like the identification thing where you can't grab the cop's gun and fire his gun because it recognizes the cop's finger.
I love that. I'd have a gun next to my bed so fast if it only shoot in my hand.
But every time somebody brings something up like that, then everyone says, oh, do you know how long that would take? And oh, do you know how expensive that would be? And then they paint these bizarre scenarios. And it's about the same issue with global warming, the same issue with illegals coming over from Mexico into this country. We must do something. We can't just do nothing about it. Ryan?
Yes, sir.
You were at the school shooting in 1992?
Yeah, at Lyndhurst High School in Olivers, California.
And how many people died in that?
Three students and a teacher, and 12 others were wounded.
It's kind of interesting when you say how many people, and you say three students and a teacher. The answer is four people.
You're right.
Well, no, the primary point is the teacher was the whole motivation for him being there. Uh-huh. Basically, he had flunked a class, was working in a chosen profession after after school, you know, after he had been kicked out, basically, because he didn't graduate, so he didn't cross, so he couldn't go any further in the job, so he decided to, 2 years later, to come back to school and kill the teacher, and in the process, a bunch of students got caught up in the crossfire.
I fantasize about doing that with Mr. Gregory, the guy who failed me from driver's ed many, many times, but decided to focus on Mr. Diliberti, who failed me in biology, and then I realized there are too many people failed me. I didn't have enough ammunition, and I eventually just picked up a shovel and got back to work.
I was actually nervous for my aunt one time. My aunt was the a professor at Temple University of Journalism, and then for the last 20 years, the head of the Department of Journalism at Temple University. And she had a student she loved, this Chinese guy, and he was over here on some political kind of visa, and he stayed at her house. And he plagiarized something, and she failed him for it.
Ah.
And when you fail for plagiarism, which is a kind of a crime, if you will, in school, they kicked him out.
Yeah.
And he had to go back to China, where he was a dissident, I guess. That's the kind of visa he was on. He was here for a political asylum.
Oh, yeah.
And my aunt, the sweetest woman in the world, sent him back for stealing.
Right.
And I went, wow, I wonder what this guy's going to do before he gets to the airport.
Hey, Ryan.
Yes, sir.
Where were you when the shooting was actually going down?
I was actually in my AP English class up on the second floor. Basically, it's the building is a big circle, and there's only two entrances, one in and one out on each side of the building. Mm-hmm. And all the bays, they're like bays. They're open. There's no doors to close. They're like, you know, 10-foot by 10-foot bays that everybody kind of walks in. So it's basically like a turkey shoot. He just walked in, you hear pop, 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 and it was such a surreal experience. You don't really realize.
Why was he shooting students if he had the grudge with the teacher?
I'm not sure of the specifics because I kind of looked down because I was on the second floor, so I peered over the – I heard pop, pop, pop. And this was during the time of the Rodney King, you know, riots in L.A. Mm-hmm. So we were kind of aware something was going on. We, you know, stuck our heads down, seemed like, you know, people running and getting kind of mowed down. And then I just told everybody to get back in the classroom. Let's just wait this out, see what's going on.
And were you able to shake this off and move forward with your life, or do you wake up and you're haunted by it?
Well, I mean, the only problem that I had for a long time was sleeping with the door closed and it barricaded. Because, you know, when you're kind of like on a campus, you feel safe. You know, you don't really worry about that stuff. And so much of your mind when it's going on, the surrealness is like you're sitting there having this discussion with yourself while people are getting shot around you. Like, is this really happening? Am I dreaming? What the heck's going on? And that night, like, was probably the biggest problem I had, problems sleeping. Unless I had the door barricaded, because basically the whole thing that I realized that day was I would never be a victim again. I'm not going to let that happen. And so I'm going to give myself a fighting chance, because I kind of froze. You know,
right,
when you do fight or flight.
Yeah.
I realized that, like, when push came to shove, I froze. And that probably bothered me more than anything else.
Yeah, there's a – thank you, Ryan. There's that part where you feel not responsible, but what could you have done?
It's called survivor guilt.
Yeah.
You wonder why you made it.
Why you made it and they didn't.
And perhaps you should have done more.
When I was in high school, I used to go into my bedroom and barricade the door as well, but that's just because I was
loading your
business. My stepmom's rolling around the house.
I think I have a basic idea of why he shot students when he was mad at the teacher. Statistically speaking, when a person who has not had like a lot of legal problems and difficulties in their life hates someone enough and he goes and shoots them,
They always empty the gun. And when they get to court, they say, I don't remember pulling the trigger.
Right.
This one shot. What happens is they just empty. They just keep shooting. And they literally, statistically speaking, almost no one who randomly fires in anger knows how many shots they fired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're in a blind rage. You just keep shooting.
And well, once the thing goes bang and you've hit a human body, I'll bet everything about what you had in mind changes.
Joe?
Yeah.
You're a cop from Phoenix?
Well, yeah.
Hi, I'm Joe.
I'm the agency I work for.
All right.
Okay. Do I know you?
No, okay. Probably.
So you're not from that agency.
What's your take on this?
Well, you guys have made some comments about, gun ownership being responsible for this to a certain extent. And to me, it just sounds a lot like, America as usual. We always want to find the scapegoat in things rather than addressing the real problem.
You know what bugs me?
People don't listen.
We never said anything even close to that.
No, I we didn't. And I think a lot of people are going to say that.
Yeah,
and
but
I think
we're not one of them.
I probably would have said it 10 years ago, but I've sort of changed my mind on this. I wouldn't have minded if a few people had guns in that building and returned some fire. All I said about guns is we regulate the hell out of everything in this country. Why not do the same with guns? I don't say that it'll stop anything or change anything. I just like the idea of knowing who has them. And I like the idea of you as a law enforcement officer having a gun that only you can fire, not a junkie that wrestles it away from you.
Absolutely. But the gun ownership registration is never going to replace responsible ownership. You have to educate your children. I was brought up in a family with guns, but I knew that, they were dangerous and they could potentially cause harm and
right.
Therefore responsibly handle them,
No, I agree with you, Officer Joe, and I feel it's the same thing with many things like we always talk about. It's like we have a problem with illegal immigration. Someone says, let's build a wall. And someone says, that's not going to work. And then someone says, well, let's have an amnesty. That's not going to work. And then somebody says, well, let's do a work visa thing. And someone says, that's not going to work.
And then Mencia steals the whole thing.
Mencia steals my thunder. My point is the answer to guns or the answer to the greenhouse gases or the answer to illegal immigration or the answer to whatever problems ail our modern society can't be let's do nothing because somebody says that's not going to work.
Right.
We have to start taking baby steps. I don't know what the answers are. I suggest we get some experts together and we slowly try to make some inroads. I'm not saying take guns away from people. I'm saying things like these innovations, these chips that I keep bringing up where the gun can only be fired by the owner and so on and so forth. These are baby steps toward making something that's inherently dangerous yet very necessary a little bit safer. Joe?
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing that's standardized in Arizona regarding law enforcement training is school and workplace violence curriculum.
There is now.
Almost.
And that happened in the inception of the Columbine incident.
Right.
And other things where don't have time to wait for a tactical unit to show up and stage because they're going to take a while to come up with a plan of action. You just have to, go forward and engage the threat. And that's what's going on.
That's what they're teaching you.
Absolutely.
Well, all right, Joe.
Well, we have Joe. Can I ask him one question about
sure.
the guns that were allegedly used in this crime? Because I'm not a gun person. I don't know guns. I'm curious what you can tell us. They found a Glock 9mm and a .22 caliber handgun.
I'm not too familiar with the .22 caliber handgun, but I'm pretty familiar with the Glock. What exactly did you want to know?
I was just curious, what kind of gun is that? Is it difficult to get? Apparently,
no.
You bought it in March.
It's everybody's favorite gun.
Glocks are probably one of the most commonly sold weapons in the United States right now. I think they dominate about 75% to 80% of the law enforcement market, and as such, they've kind of translated across into
the gangster market.
So that's what police officers use.
Most.
Oh, yeah. And so do gangsters.
And this guy, except for me, I would use an old musket. It took time to reload, but it scared the bejesus out of the gangbangers. Yes, Danny.
I have a question. It's a tiny bit off subject, but I don't want to lose it. There's a young man named Nick on my computer screen that says, hey, Danny, whoever booked this guy that made the video, are they in for Outbook August? This is the most talked about thing on TV, and this is the only place I have seen or heard of him. You guys are the only ones that have him.
First of all, it is a great booking, but he was all over the news last night.
I just thought that was interesting.
It will be weighed in, and it was discussed as well.
Yeah,
I just thought it was a little too morbid to bring it up on the air. Joe, thank you. and take down a perp for me today, would you, buddy?
You guys have a lot of...
Thank you.
Later, buddy.
Be safe, Joe.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, that Glock, I think, holds a clip of, I think at the max, maybe 14, 15 maybe. Rounds.
I think a standard Glock is 9. I'm not sure. I'm not, but the 22 that I know, actually the 22 that I've been shot with, was a 22 revolver. It's a very small gun and it's a big step up from a pellet because it's fired by gunpowder instead of
air. I don't think he had a revolver. I think he had a semi-automatic gun, which is... It goes off as fast as you can squeeze the trigger.
I gotta tell you though, unless you learn this in The Sopranos, a double tap, if you will, which is two behind the ear. A 22. First of all, 80% of gunshot victims recover completely. Did you know that?
Mm-mm.
Completely, they don't just not die; they recover completely. 80%. So, a 22, but they're small, so they bang around inside is the big problem. They roll around and rip up your guts because they're small, but if he's running around and just shooting people with a 22 and then reloading the clip, that many people aren't dying. He had to line them up and execute them.
That's
bang,
what
bang,
they're
bang.
Saying happened.
There's no way with a 22 automatic he killed that many people.
Well, and at 9 and the Glock 9.
Let me,
very serious.
Yeah, let me, and obviously I think the Glock, I think it probably held about 14, 16 rounds, and he's able to change the clip in a second and a half if he's capable, if he uses the gun, if he knows, if he's training, and obviously that's what he's doing. And when you're hiding under a desk, you can't charge a guy who's 30 feet away who's reloading in a matter of 2 or 3 seconds. You're not going to make it there, and also you're freaked out of your gourd. But here's what and they lined everyone up, and he shot them. Here's what I was saying to a friend of mine. We instruct everyone in society to get in line. Whenever something like this happens, don't argue. Do what they want. No heroes. No one needs to be a hero. And I wonder if we should revise that. Because here's the advice I would give to my child. Junior, if you're at a bank and some guy comes in with a ski mask and he yells, get on the ground, everyone get on the ground, then you get on the ground because he's going to the vault. Right. He wants his money, and then he's going to leave. Your job is to not trip him on his way to the door.
Right.
This is going to be the worst 30 seconds of your life, but this guy's focused on the cash.
Yeah, he doesn't want anything to do with you. I've mentioned that in passing to other people as well.
On the other hand, if you're in a place with no cash register, if you're sitting in class or you're sitting in church or you're sitting in a park and a guy starts rounding people up and he doesn't ask for anyone's wallet, well, then maybe you shouldn't go along with him.
Well, speaking of that 80% of people that survive being shot and recuperate completely, think about that. Most people aren't that good with their guns. So the guy is rounding people up. You run as fast as you can while zigzagging, if you will. He's probably going to miss you. Your son would have a much better chance if he listened to you. If he said, everybody line up, and your son went, bang, that away, he'd stay on the crowd.
And again, yeah, I think we need to revise this, which is if you're standing in a 7-Eleven and a drug-crazed, drug-addled guy who hasn't slept in 2 weeks comes into the store and wants to get the $20 out of the register so he can get another hit of crack, well, then your job is to stand aside and let this horrible situation transpire. On the other hand, if Al-Qaeda is rounding you up in the back of a bus, perhaps it's time to fight because they don't want your wallet. They want your life. And it's a very different environment. All right, we need to take a break. We have a lot of your calls. Teresa has the news complete with updates, and we have much more to get to next on the Adam Carolla Show.
Like the drops? Then kick back and enjoy Bald Brian's bonus B-sides on the Adam Carolla Show.
I feel pretty and witty and my.
I don't listen. I don't listen. I feel pretty and witty and gay.
I hate gay people.
I'm not a pervert, but I'm curious.
Well, I was watching porn at about 140 decibels in the middle of the afternoon. Yes, I was supposed to be at work. Yes, my dad's he's a Baptist minister. He's prominent in the town.
I got an idea. Let's go to Disneyland and then not ride the rides.
You want a party? I got my own ride. I got my own place. I got my own stash.
Tony, can you rape a hooker?
Can I?
Show's flailing. The wheels are coming off the wagon.
Oh, my God. Get it together. You're just a drunk. Who cares who didn't hug you enough? Shut up.
Hey, aren't you the pedophile who killed himself? No, that was my son.
Jeez. When it comes to enticing pedophiles, I just don't know the best way.
Hey, dillweed, what'd you do? slammed too many drugs last weekend. Right?
Danny, all these stories can't be true.
Tra-la-la-la-la-la-la. So look how smart I am. I'm going to skip ahead. Well, speaking of smart, smartest news, and that's what I hear from Teresa Strasser, not from her, but about her. Whenever somebody brings her name up, they're like, man, that girl is smart. And I think, yes, if only she could harness it.
You know what I think?
Thank you.
Because people say, they really do. You should take that as a fact. They say it to me all the time. That Teresa girl's really smart. She had so much of the show. But in my head, I think, just refrain from saying, oh, she's so crazy.
Yeah,
I swear when they tell me how great you are, and I agree completely, I'm thinking in the back of my head, nah, don't bother.
This is going so well. It got off to a good start.
Well, it's, you know, we always talk about that sort of apocalyptic future where we have supercomputers who can think for themselves, but eventually they turn on society. That's what happens with smart people's brains.
Right.
They're supercomputers that turn on society, although society is the body that they inhabit. All right, T. Anyway, good times. Let's do the news.
Teresa Strasser, the number one Jewish news reporter on this station right now.
Virginia Tech University issued a statement this morning. They gave a press conference. They have positively identified the gunman as 23-year-old Cho Sung-hui. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. He was enrolled as an undergraduate student in his senior year. He was an English major at Virginia Tech. And here is a bit of the press conference this morning from Virginia.
Victims were found in at least four classrooms as well as a stairwell. We know that there were a number of heroic events that took place, students and faculty alike. Within minutes of this tragedy unfolding, the gunman was discovered among several of the victims in one of the classrooms. He had taken his own life.
Yeah.
Now,
we never get the satisfaction of shooting those guys.
Right. Right. Well, of prosecuting them sometimes you shoot them. Sometimes it's suicide by cop.
It's just, look, it's more satisfying to me when I hear that a police sniper took the guy's head off from the other building. I like it better. One of the things I hated about the North Hollywood bank robbery is one of the guys killed himself while he was just walking down the street once the cops had surrounded him. It's all right. At least he was being shot while he shot himself. But I want these guys to experience that terror that they're inflicting on their victims, not on themselves.
Do you remember that till that North Hollywood bank robbery where they just kept marching?
It's my hometown, baby.
Oh, my God. That was amazing.
That's what we're famous for.
Well, this was the not only the deadliest school shooting in the history of our country, it's the deadliest shooting rampage, period. There's going to be a lot of questions about this 23-year-old. Now, yesterday, one of these students described what she saw of the gunman. Here is a student from Virginia Tech describing who we now believe to be Cho Sung-hui.
He was, I would say, about a little bit under 6 feet tall, young-looking Asian, dressed sort of strangely, almost like a Boy Scout, with very short-sleeved, light tan shirt and some sort of ammo vest with black over it.
Yeah, and I know a couple things. First off, the Glock clip can hold 19 rounds, and it's about the size of a Snickers bar, the clip. Nice. So if you imagine you're wearing a vest and you have 10 of those Snickers bars stuffed in front of you, sort of like John Popper, when he used to play the harmonica for Blues Traveler, had one of those leather vests that had 12 harmonicas in it. If you're wearing that, and you can drop the clip and stuff the new one in a matter of a second in a quarter, you'd imagine that'd be a pretty hard guy to stop. Well, and that evidently is what he was doing.
Don't forget, also turn them upside down against each other and duct tape them. So you just drop it out, turn it around, put it back in.
Right.
So you actually now have 38 rounds.
And I'll tell you why this is a monumental tragedy, other than 32 lives lost. I don't count the gunman's life as a tragedy being lost. We are always told not to make any distinction between life. But for me, and for anybody who can think rationally, you go into an old age home and you shoot up 30, 85-year-olds, and it's tragic, but it ain't this.
Right.
These are not only young people, but they're people who would have been our future fill-in-the-blanks, leaders, husbands, wives.
Society, instead of what you usually rail against.
Yes, and I know we're supposed to do that thing where, hey, there's some guy who's killing junkie hookers, or there's somebody who's killing old people, or there's somebody who's killing homeless people. There is a difference. We're not allowed to talk about it, but there is. When a guy's 60 years old and he's living on the streets and he's an alcoholic and he's a junkie and some teenagers beat the crap out of him, it's sad and it's tragic, but it's not a 19-year-old engineering student. This is sadder. That person's life is worth more. It just is.
That's a bold statement, Adam. I'm not saying I disagree.
We're not allowed to say it, but it's a layup to me. And look. We all realize when you drive down the street and you see a squirrel that got ran over, you go, nah, that's a shame. And then when you see a deer lying, you go, oh, that's a bigger shame. And then when you see a horse, well, keep going up the ladder until you get to human beings. And when you have the old one, or when you have the uneducated, or the person that was in prison, you hear about people dying in prison. Is that a big tragedy? It's a tragedy, not as big as a person that's out there coming up for a cure for AIDS or cancer or whatever. Look, I am willing to say that there's certain people that are more valuable than others.
Yes,
that's
you are
the society we live in.
And
if you said, hey, homeless alcoholic guy could die, or guy who's working in the lab who's right on the verge of coming up with stem cell research to stop lung cancer, well, I like that guy's life. I think it's worth 10 of those other guys' lives. And these are young people that are not only young, which gets them points, but they are in college. They're students. They're engineering students. They're not those drama students. Jesus Christ.
Are they worth slightly less than the engineering?
Quite a bit less than the homeless. The point is, this tragedy is now, we can put 10 zeros behind it because of these people and what they were doing and on the verge of.
Now, the investigations are ongoing, but early reports say that the timeline is something like this. At 7:15 a.m. yesterday, the gunman opened fire on the fourth floor of a dormitory on the Virginia Tech campus. He killed two people in the dorm room. The early reports say he was confronting a girlfriend who he believed was cheating on him. The two people he killed were the girlfriend and one of the dorm's resident advisors, or RAs. Again, that has not been confirmed by the police, but about 2 hours later, he's believed to have stormed Norris Hall, the engineering classroom building where most of the carnage took place. And so far, as you mentioned, the death toll is 32. 33 if you include the gunmen, and you know, obviously there are more than a dozen people still in the hospital. So.
Yeah, some are critical, so this could still go up.
Absolutely, and a description of the carnage that I found especially chilling was from a student named Josh Wargo. It is, if you have kids in the car or whatever, you may want to not listen for a second. Here is a description of what this student experienced. Some people, as you may have heard, jumped out the window to escape the shooter, and here is his description of that.
A couple of my classmates, when they jumped out of the window, one of them broke his leg, and I know one of my classmates fell on her back, and I'm not sure how she's doing now. I've heard from some of my other friends in the department, they're calling around. Three of my classmates who were in the class that I was in didn't make it out of the window in time, and they were shot. One of them got shot in the leg a couple times, and one's in the arm, and then two more were shot in the arms. I'm told that they're in stable condition at the Montgomery County Hospital. They told me that my professor was shot in the face and didn't make it. But I'm not sure. That's nothing official. That's just what I've heard.
And as far as post-traumatic stress disorders, this is something that I know from working with Dr. Drew for all those years. These people need help right now. It's the very early, the research suggests that when you have a tragedy like this happen and you witness a tragedy like this, that the sooner help can get to you, the better, because there's a certain point where it gets locked in and then you can't pry it out. So I hope everybody with a degree in this is converging on this area right now, because not only do they need cops and doctors and surgeons and all that, but there's a mental health component to this that's huge.
I used to not believe that in war zones and stuff like that. I used to, you know, they come home different people than they were, but I would think people that had seen something like this or a building collapse on them and they'd say, I need therapy. I always thought of them as some kind of faker that wanted to get out of work or something like that. until one day I saw something with Gretchen, and she handled it so much better than I, but I couldn't shake it. And if I think about it, it still bothers me, but I couldn't shake it for years. I saw a gypsy cab in New York run into a crowd of at least 10 people on purpose because he was mad at something. Just took off from a red light and hit them on the other side of the street, and they all went flying with this deadening little thud.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
nothing special.
Freaked out.
Just a thud.
Right.
And Gretchen started to run, and I grabbed her because I thought she was freaking out. She was running to get his license plate number because he was kind of stuck.
Right.
I was panicked and stopped her, and that gave me kind of nightmares for a couple of years. Not that I had seen it, but that there was somebody that cruel, that close to me, that could do it.
Yeah, well, they say
I believe that now.
They say that early and quick therapy, just like a gunshot wound, you don't treat it a month right. later, you get on it now.
Absolutely. Here is another description of the very bloody aftermath at Virginia Tech. Take a listen.
It was, I mean, just so hard to describe. Just people shot, just blood pretty much everywhere. Just completely unreal. It's so hard to describe.
And you want to talk about some therapy. How about the people have to go in there and clean that mess up?
Sure. I mean, it's what you said is absolutely true, that I hope people are converging who can help people with post-traumatic stress disorder, because they if they get treated earlier, like you said, it's going to be more useful.
Yeah, hopefully there'll be a whole department on the campus dedicated to that. I mean, that was already in place before this tragedy.
Absolutely. Now, this afternoon, President George W. Bush and his wife, Laura, are going to be taking place in a service of mourning. That's what the White House is announcing today. This is going to be at Virginia Tech University, going to be around 2 o'clock local time.
Well, remember, and I'm not the first person to bring this up, but remember when I was saying over the last couple of weeks and months on this show, after hearing more Anna Nicole news and then more Imus news, we're officially out of news. We have nothing to talk about. Thus, we're talking about a shock jock who said something shocking and an ex-Playboy model who OD'd. We're officially out of news, and we have been officially out of news for like the last 3 months, but I feel like it all came back in one morning.
It is
one morning. Now, this is what you call news. I feel all the people that obsessed with Anna Nicole and Imus should be ashamed of themselves. This is news. Sorry, T.
That's okay. This is less of news, mm-hmm. but life goes on. And in much lighter news, Richard Gere is possibly the most hated man in India right now.
Wow.
I will tell you why.
That's
and I would like to let you know that we will keep you posted on the events in Virginia as the day goes by. But in the meantime, why is Richard Gere the most hated man in India? Well, yesterday...
Runaway Bride? What's that movie? Did this follow-up to Pretty Woman?
I loved that movie. Runaway Bride.
See, well,
you know it's
not.
Tell you
said I was
you
smart.
Just said how smart you was, and I said she was crazy, and he turned on me.
I hear the Indians didn't take well to it.
The Indians are angry at him not because of Runaway Bride, but because he kissed an actress named Shilpa Shetty. She's one of India's most popular actresses. He kissed her on the cheek. It was at an AIDS awareness rally. Yes, an AIDS awareness rally in New Delhi on Sunday. And he kissed her on the hand, and then he grabbed her and dipped her and kissed her on the cheek several times. And in India, this kind of public display of affection is not acceptable. So they were burning him in effigy. They had taking sticks and putting pictures of his head on top of the stick and then burning the dummies.
What is the officer and the gentleman doing? Just quickly get the Bush effigy and put the gear head on it.
Gear head. Never thought I'd say that.
Well,
these people have their priorities straight. That's the good news. And the whole country's dying of AIDS, and they're burning Richard Gere's effigy.
Now, here is a priceless clip of Richard Gere. He is at the rally, of which I just spoke, and he's chanting. He's chanting in Hindi, but what he's saying is, no condom, no sex.
Ah.
Here is Richard Gere.
Condom nahi, condom nahi. Sex nahi, condom nahi, condom nahi, sex nahi, sex nahi. Thank you very much.
He could say condom, no condom, no sex, but he couldn't figure out how to say thank you.
more advanced.
Okay, by the way, Mubarak Ho is congratulations. Okay, I mean, you can figure out thanks in Hindi.
Well, he's not thanking the Indian newspapers for putting pictures of him kissing this actress on their front pages, because that was the reason for the chaos.
I'm sure I still understand that.
They've offended. I don't love
it. It's a very conservative culture, and he kissed this woman on the cheek.
Is she an untouchable, or is she like an okay person?
She's a famous actress, so I'm sure she's not an untouchable.
Apparently she's not. Just ask Richard.
Here's how I'd like to treat all of these screwball countries. I'd like to treat it like the roommate we tried to help about 10 times and eventually went, screw it, we're moving out. Like, look, I tried to get you sober. I tried to clean you up. I tried to keep you steer trouble. I talked to your boss and got your job back, blah, blah, blah. But now I've just come home and you're on your second sixer of Mickey's, and you decide to call in sick and you're masturbating, and that's my bathrobe, and I'm moving out. And you know what? I don't care. I don't care what happens. Blow yourself up with drugs, get thrown out on the street, move back home. I don't care. I'm out of here. That's what I feel like we ought to do with all these countries. Like, look, fellas, we've got about 20 years of sending celebrities over here trying to get you guys to use condoms and to quit killing each other with flaming tires and machetes. And you know what? Not working. We're out of here.
We're gone.
Done trying to tell you how to plant your field. Done trying to tell you what to do with the condoms. Done trying to explain how to use a toothbrush. We're out of here. We're gone.
That magic electricity thing we gave you, that's coming with us.
That's right. Go sick.
Now, let me close with this. How would you feel if I told you that Heather Mills, formerly married to Paul, I think in the middle of getting a divorce, she was on Dancing with the Stars. Well, it finally happened. She fell.
Ooh.
Yes, the producers finally got the buzzworthy moment that they were hoping for. Now, her prosthetic leg did not come off. I believe she has it on there pretty well. But she fell. It looked as though maybe she put her weight on the wrong leg or something. Here is Judge
Which
Carrie
Which is the
Ann.
Right leg? If one of them is fake, how do you put your weight on the wrong leg?
The right leg to put the weight on is the one you can feel when you put a cigarette out on it.
Thank you.
Then I don't have either good feet.
Well, here is Judge Carrie Ann Inaba, and we'll discuss, but let's take a listen.
The fact that you fell at the end just reminds me of how amazing it is that you're in this competition, because you run that risk every time you get in.
That's bogus.
Because you fell, I have to take a point off, but I still appreciate what you did. What I love about you is you're so free-spirited. When you dance, you dance like nobody's watching, and that's the way I love for people to dance. I think you could get better, because I want to see you do really well. Take ballet classes. You need a little more strength up here, okay? But good job.
Points deducted.
You would think... Because as you were introducing that story, you said you can also call her Mrs. McCartney. And under my breath, I said you can also refer to her as that dirty whore. Mm-hmm. And then Teresa said she fell. And that would be my moment to feel really bad that I had said that.
Right.
Apparently the dirty whore fell. And I stand by it.
Well,
God, I hate her.
As you know, there are many athletes competing in the Dancing with the Stars. Clyde Drexler, the Glide. Mm-hmm. And Apollo Anton Ono, the speed skater, got a perfect score last night.
Ooh,
first one of the season. He's a very good dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And Heather Mills, going to have to take some ballet.
All right. Yeah. Did they kick anyone off?
No, that happens tonight. And I know that you'll be dying to know who it is. So I'll make sure and include it in the news. And as I said before, we will make sure to keep you up to date with the latest developments out of Virginia. I'm Teresa Strasser, and that's the news.
Teresa Strasser with the real news. QCNN.
Well, next up, a famous son, Rod Stewart's kid, Sean Stewart of Sons of Hollywood, that new show on A&E Sunday nights, 10 o'clock. We're going to talk to Sean Stewart next on The Adam Carolla Show.
Back to The Adam Carolla Show with Teresa Strasser and Danny Bonaducci.
I pretty much have the Ferrari figure with a Jetta brain. Means I look good as but I'm dumber than
from the Sons of Hollywood, Sean Stewart on the Adam Carolla Show.
Good to see you, Sean.
Good morning.
Amen, man.
I read.
What's going on?
I shouldn't say I read. I was watching an episode of Sons of Hollywood where you're in the recording studio, and they were trying to make you look dumb, I think, the way they cut it up. It kept sort of cutting back to you with a look. And I said to my wife, oh, they're cooking that. I know what they're doing. They can sort of control things. We don't think reality TV. We think it's reality.
Look, the way they made me look crazy when I'm perfectly
normal.
That's
right. Right. Huh. Right.
Do they, all editing.
Do they do that? And if they do, are you offended by it?
That was a little bit in the editing in that meeting.
Yes. Although, and when you see that.
I'm not that dumb.
Right. I just mean if I saw that, I'd be angry that they cut it up to make me look dumb.
But I must say, and they did, because I know Sean very well, know for a long time, but Sean and I spent a little time together.
Camp Snoopy.
At Camp Snoopy. Although they don't like it that we called it that, because there
what
really is a Camp Snoopy.
Snoopy.
It's a code name for some place we weren't allowed to say at the
Got
time.
It.
It turns out Knott's Berry Farm actually has a Camp Snoopy, and they weren't that happy about it.
Does this place end in Hab?
Yeah.
Yes.
No, but we all made promises we'd never go there again.
To get there, are there 12 steps?
That. Mm-hmm. All right, we all get
12
it.
Steps?
So,
yeah, when I was walking up the stairs, I pretty much counted them.
But I remember
Sean.
You
only got to the fourth one.
Would walk around with a Walkman of the day, you know, with a pretty big square on his hip and headphones in so nobody could hear any music. But he'd be singing at the top of his lungs, just walking around. And you look at you go, that guy's either really confident or really crazy.
Well, Sean, you must have been young when you were in the place that ended
young
with
now.
Hab.
Yeah, I'm
that's
still
what
young.
I'm saying. Well, that's what I mean. I mean, if you're young now and you're walking around with a Walkman on, you must have been 11 when you were in rehab.
When was that?
I was probably 21, about 20 years old.
About 20, and that's where you and Bonaducci initially fell in love?
Yeah.
Yes.
But then what happened later where he was kicking you in the head?
Well, everybody was kicking everybody in the head.
That's when he found out I cheated on him.
There was another guy there. Do you remember this? The other guy who was laying on the ground and you didn't like what he said, so you kind of kicked him in the forehead?
Yes.
And then Sean and I got into a small altercation where I can only call it got a draw, and
actually, I was pretty scared of Danny. First time I got to rehab, I see him in like by the pool boxing. I was like, dude, this is the Mike Tyson here of the rehab.
Well, that's all I would do. They had that's the only gym equipment that they had was one of those water filled body bags,
right?
And I would just beat it every second I had a free chance, and I would beat it with violent intent and scary, spooky faces because I wanted the next counselor that I said, you talk to me like that again, I'm going to kill you. I wanted him to believe me. So really, it was mostly just the show, but I got in great shape.
Charlie Sheen didn't come out of his room for two days after seeing that.
Like, there's people that picked my team and said, just let's stay behind the crazy guy.
So Sean Stewart, Danny calls it a draw, but was it more like us drawing a picture of him kicking your ass, that kind of draw, or was it a tie draw?
Danny would always be like, Sean, be nice to your mom. Sean, be nice to your mom.
Well, his mother's a friend of mine.
That begs a question. Your dad, obviously, is Rod Stewart, and your stepmother at one point was Rachel Hunter.
Yeah, that's my stepmom. Always my stepmom.
Did you get along well with her?
Oh, she's great.
Really?
That'd be nice. She's amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Best person I've ever met.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
She's a very attractive lady. You're not biologically related.
No.
Well, I see what you're getting at, baby
girl.
You're
getting at.
Listen, if my biological mom looked like that after two beers, I'd be on her.
Hey,
let's be honest.
My mom's nasty looking. I still have to come on beers.
Right. She's a woman first. She's my mom second.
Did you have after those 20, kind of...
After 28 days, Sean was looking really good to me.
Sean is a very pretty man.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You're pretty, too.
Thank you.
Any thought? Dane Spoon?
Any thoughts of getting on Stepmom?
Okay, fine.
Right on, Sean.
That's honest.
So, Sean, now, I met your dad once, and the only thing I really remember is that he's uncut. I don't know why.
What?
I bring that
you
up.
Mean uncircumcised?
Yes.
What he means.
I had that discussion with him.
I'm uncircumcised, too.
Yeah.
I got to rethink our date.
It's a European.
They just look like hard marks.
Guys that are uncircumcised, girls like when they have, they feels better for them for some reason.
I've heard that.
Really?
Yeah, I've heard that to be true.
Come on, baby.
I'm sorry.
Drop the attitude.
I can't be too selective right now.
And besides, all the penis you've been through, I'm sure you've seen at least 25
uncut. It doesn't look like you're getting laid much anyway.
Good. You can tell.
I can tell.
It's an aura you put off.
It's an aura.
So, Sean.
He says, I need to get laid right now.
This season, you guys are wrapped up, right? Is everything in the can, as they say, for the first season of Sons of Hollywood?
Yes, everything's in the can.
And has there been discussion of a season two?
We're talking about it right now.
And how is, now you work with Randy Spelling and also David Weintraub as well. How well did you know everyone before you started shooting?
I actually knew them very well. Me and Randy grew up and we knew each other and we didn't really get along.
Mm-hmm.
And
shocker.
I think one of my friends smacked him across the face.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a year or two after that, we ran into each other and we became friends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got to give that to Sean. That I mean, it may not be like a grown-up thing to do, but since I'm 47 and I've been known to still do it, Sean is not like an athlete or anything. But if you cross Sean, I've seen him blast people in the head. The last time I read about you, some guy said something you didn't like at Nobu, and you knocked his ass out, and Dean Cain jumped on your back.
Yeah, Superman was trying to get the Knicks rolling Superman.
That's a true story.
Back on.
He knocked this guy out at a restaurant, and Dean Cain attacked him.
What happened? Out of smelt eggs? And you went sick on this guy?
I was drinking a little bit
too much. It's a Hollywood thing, people.
I was drinking a little bit too much, and took a lot of volume, and, you know, partying it up in Nobu, and some kid didn't said something I didn't like, and, you know, I decided to go Mike Tyson on him.
Uh-huh. Sean, were you just in at Camp Snoopy the one time, or have you been back to rehab?
I've been to rehab more times than I can count.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
And now, are you sober now?
Yes, I'm sober.
Uh-huh.
How long you got?
10 minutes.
So you haven't been drinking since we've been on?
2.5 months.
Two and a half months.
Congratulations, yeah. Boy. That's great. What's the next one?
You have tomorrow as a year, Danny.
Tomorrow's my year. My first year.
I can't believe I keep track of this.
That's awesome, Danny.
I just know tomorrow was the 18th. I knew it was the 18th. Thanks, man. First year I've ever had in 15 years of trying to get sober. So when Sean says, because it's easy to, you know, not that we were doing it, but to make fun of a guy that's been to rehab a lot.
Yeah.
This is my first year, and I've been trying to clean up for at least a decade, and I've never made a year before.
I got a year once.
Did you really?
I relapsed 2 weeks before I got it.
Well, I thought I was going to guess 5 to 6, but you...
Look at this. This is my sobriety date right here tattooed on my arm. It's totally wrong.
I should get it, too, because I forget my sobriety date.
It won't help. I drank like 2 weeks later. It's not right. It's just random.
I'll just have like 12 different dates written down my arm.
You
March 12th,
use,
May 12th.
You can use the Sharpie I used to write black owned on my thigh.
Sean, was it just alcohol or did you have a problem with drugs?
I'm sorry. Did I snigger?
I had a problem with drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't look to me like you had a problem.
No, me either. When I was drooling on myself, I didn't have no problem.
Yeah.
Now your very famous father, who I don't know if he had his struggles with alcohol and substance abuse and things like that. I didn't hear too much about it. I assume any rocker that came out of that era dabbled in a little blow and a little booze. But did your dad ever have a substance abuse problem?
No.
No, and did he try to help you when he found out you had a problem?
I don't think he really understood the whole substance abuse drug problem. I think he thought probably it was all controllable.
Right. So he was basically old school telling you to get it together.
Yeah,
as
but
opposed.
When you're right. A kid and you're crashing your car and six at the X's, you definitely got a problem.
And did you grow up, do you blame your childhood for the substance abuse? I mean, did you grow up in a sort of undisciplined or unrealistic environment?
Well, the way I grew up... my dad was on tour, and my mom was always the one who was the disciplinarian.
Mm-hmm.
And she always was the one who, you know, had 3 kids. And at the time we were kids, she got sick. She got Epstein-Barr, and she didn't have the energy to do anything. So, like, when we were in the yard, we wanted her to come play with us, and she didn't have the energy to do that.
She was basically depressed, locked in a room, yelling, freak out.
Yes, pretty much.
You know what? I got a little cathartic there.
I'm just
going to
wait a little 20 years.
Freak out!
I want a tape of this. So when Dante says these exact same words to me, I can go, Sean beat you to this 20 years ago. When he said the same story, Daddy wouldn't come on play with me.
So you were left unchecked because Dad's on the road doing the concerts. Mom is locked in a room and you're running wild.
She wasn't really locked in her room. Mm-hmm. She just was really tired. So she like... laid down a lot.
And
like she locked herself in the room and said, I need to get away from my terrible children.
So essentially,
driving me crazy.
The cat was away and the mice did play.
Yes.
And so you started to get into trouble early because
you were unsupervised. To give Dad a little credit, Dad has offered, and I think you've gone on the road with your dad, haven't you?
Yes, I've gone on the road with
your
dad.
You have?
Yeah.
To perform with your dad or just to go
on
the road?
To work hard.
Just go on the road to work hard to learn about the business.
And did you do it?
Yes.
And did it suck?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Because your dad didn't pamper you. He made you go out there and work.
Yes, he made me go out and work for my money.
What an ass.
Uh-huh. And then you learned the value of a dollar, and you said, F this.
Yeah, you're going to roll
up. I'm going
up.
Back to Nobu to punch Superman.
Yes. You can roll up a single just as easy as you can roll up 100.
You know you're in Hollywood when you're punching out somebody in Nobu and Dean Cain, a celebrity lands on your back.
It was bitching. I mean, it was the first time I'd ever
Danny, didn't you work at Nobu?
I know I worked at Sushi on Sunset, but a lot of that happened there, too. Mm. But I remember when I read that story, I just totally thought, I know that guy. I know that guy that hit that guy that Superman jumped on his back in a fancy restaurant. That's like celebrity to me.
Yeah.
Anybody can do a TV series. Getting a scrap.
Punch somebody in the face and go to jail for 3 months for it.
You went to 3 months?
3 months.
3 months.
I was thinking a year.
God, the last time I hit a guy, it just cost me $30,000.
You were in jail for how long?
3 months.
3 months. And yes. that was because you were on probation when you hit the guy?
Yes. No, what happened was I went on probation and then I got arrested again after that. I fell asleep and took too many pills on Sunset and passed out.
Mm-hmm.
Just on the street?
On the street.
Really?
I was tired. I thought it was my bedtime.
Sure. You had Epstein Barr also.
Yes.
But you've cleaned up.
But I was really high.
You have 2.5 months sober.
That's
sobriety.
Right.
Danny,
awesome.
Coming on 1 year tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow. Yep.
Danny, we wish you well, but if you are going
to... Danny, you want to go to relapse tonight?
Yeah, if you're going to relapse, tonight's the night.
Can I tell you right
now? Do it a week from now. It doesn't make any difference.
When I go off the deep end, it will be in the middle of our biggest promotion during our biggest ratings period, and somebody will get hurt.
So you wait for 2 weeks.
I promise you.
I got to review this with Sean. You punched a guy at Nobu, and then you passed out on Sunset, and then you went to jail for 3 months.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And
what happened to Dean Cain?
Dean Cain, I don't even know who screwed Dean Cain.
Okay.
Yeah, Dean, I know Dean is a very nice guy.
He is a nice guy. I have a picture of his wiener.
Maybe.
Really? Huh?
I have a picture of Dean Cain's penis.
I bet you it's small.
Is it wearing a cape?
Is it faster than a speeding bullet?
Well, there was a big private showing of whatever movie.
This is damn exciting
Caribbean. Uh-huh. Pirates of the Caribbean was an outdoor showing at Disneyland. They shut it down and put these giant screens up. Mm-hmm. And they said no cameras. And Gretchen and I thought, funny game, we'll sneak cameras in and we'll take pictures. Because we don't normally care. We're starstruck, but we forget we have cameras. But mm-hmm. there was a sign saying no cameras, mm-hmm. so now we had to have some. And so I go to the urinal, and Dean Cain comes up next to me, and I've got my camera in secret spy position anyway, because Gretchen and I are playing this game. It's under my armpit, and I look like I have my arms folded.
Sure.
And I just lean back like this and go, click. And we get it developed later, and sure enough, full-on Superman's wiener. I got it.
Well,
I'm
going
to put it up on eBay.
If Dean's listening, he's hurrying to the studio to jump on Bonaducci now. Hey, get a drop of that. Sean Stewart, Mazel tov on the sobriety, by the way.
Yeah, right.
I hope you can stay up with
that.
2.5 months
is a nightmare, too, because you're really still just jonesing. Every place you go is still every place you go. Like, I would not think about going to most of the places I used to go. It doesn't occur to me anymore. But at 2.5 months, you still only know certain places and certain people. It's really hard.
Yeah.
So I wish you the best, and I'm really proud of you.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you, Danny.
Sean Stewart, everyone. Sons of Hollywood, A&E, Sunday night, 10 o'clock on, A&E, first season, everybody. We'll pray for a second. When we come back, I think we'll change up gears and do a little Angel Adam, Devil Danny. You know how the game is played, 866-901-ADAM. You have a moral dilemma. You want to get divorced, you want to get fired, you want to quit, you want to punch your boss, you want to punch Dean Cain, you have a picture of his penis, you want to sell on eBay, but you know it's not right. Angel Adam, Devil Danny, next on the Adam Carolla Show. I took a Heineken out of the mini bar at the hotel. Should I pay?
And you go to the store, you buy a bottle of vodka, you don't take it out of the mini bar, you freak.
Call 866-901-ADAM.
Bonaducci was made for this bit.
And you'll get both sides of the story.
Angel Adam,
Devil Danny.
On the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, that's why they call Angel Adam Devil Danny.
One of the finest compliments I've ever been paid. I went home and told my wife over and over again that in the middle of the show, Adam looked at me on there and said, you were made for this bit. I was really flattered. Although I know you're calling me Satan, but I mean, actually, it's a step down. It's kind of a step down in the way I think of myself, but still that I have been able to convey it to you and have you say that back to me, that I was really flattered.
Well, I wasn't calling you Satan. I was saying that there are certain, as a performer, it's like I'm a funny guy, but I'm horrible at impressions, voices, that kind of stuff.
I could do any celebrity who has throat cancer. Pick one. Any celebrity, male or female, pick one. Watch.
Okay, do...
James Stewart. I like to hear...
Jimmy Stewart?
With cancer.
Okay, ready? You know what? It'd be a wonderful life if I didn't have this friggin' throat cancer.
Yeah.
That's Jimmy Stewart.
That's all right, but not nearly as good as your Al Jolson.
Oh, my God. A Clint Eastwood or something?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. Dead Nuts on. Yeah, how about you make my day? Did you do Yul Brynner?
I've kind of cut this one out of my act since he died of cancer.
John Wayne? John Wayne? That's right, partner. Right back at you.
Everyone's got a Nicholson.
Yeah, oh, yeah, we all got one of those.
I can't handle the truth.
You can't handle the cancer.
All right, well, this time to do what Danny was put on this earth for. Devil Danny and Angel Adam.
God love you.
Got a moral dilemma? Ask Angel Adam.
Do not cheat in wedlock. It will haunt you.
Or Devil Danny.
Climbing over their corpses to the top of the food chain.
You have dilemmas. We have answers. Matt from Irvine.
How you doing, guys?
Good. Hi. What is the dilemma, my friend?
All right. Well, here's the deal. I am thinking about stepping down as best man for my homeboy's wedding because his fiance is a psycho narcissist.
Mm-hmm. And you don't want to condone the wedding.
Well, not necessarily that. That's his decision to make. But she's made it obvious that she doesn't want me there. My fiance is in her wedding party, and it's made obvious that she doesn't want her there. So, you know, I'm kind of between a rock and a hard place.
Pleasant,
here.
Matt, but let me start by saying this is not about you. This is about your buddy. Now, you step down, and someone will just fill your size 9 patent leather rented shoes as soon as you leave them. So somebody's going to be the best man. It's just not going to be the best man for the best man job. Matt, this is not about her. This is not about you. This is about your friend, your dear, dear friend who saw fit to give you the highest honor a buddy can bestow upon another buddy, which is making him best man at the holiest of all unions, his wedding. Thank you.
Let me tell you this. Here is, because this is really kind of out of my territory, because I just don't give a rat's ass who your friend is marrying and whether she's crazy or not. Here's what the deal is, buddy. You should not only step down as the best man, you should make a decision. Should I step down or should I get a ladder and step to the top rung as the very best man? Because what is this saying about you? If this is some psycho-ass bitch and she's the bride and he picks that bitch to be the bride and picks you as the best man, what does that say about you? If these are the choices he makes, I'm going to marry this dirty, skanky, stinky-ass psycho and I want my other dirty, stinky, skanky-ass psycho friend as the best man. You're being insulted. Don't take it. You want to not show up at the wedding? You should not show up at the wedding right after you have sex with her. And that will show your friend why you step down.
Well, there you go, Matt. You have both extremes.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, Matt, is this wedding?
It's in June.
Oh, so you have a little time.
Mm-hmm. Little time, but the bachelor party is supposed to be next weekend, which, incidentally, she chose the location for.
Is it a spa?
No, it's Vegas, but no, we can still have some debaucherous times, but I got trumped on my plan first of all, and that was just a...
Your friend just can't stop calling you a loser. Online.
Where did you want to go for the bachelor party?
Golf trip to Mexico, man.
Mm-hmm. Your friend just won't stop calling you a loser. I'm going to marry a stupid person, so I want a stupid person as my best man, and I don't care about his wishes. Matter of fact, step down as the best man, go up to the wedding, punch the groom in the face.
I've been on a few of those golf trips to Mexico, and it usually goes something like this. All right, honey, I'll be back in 3 days. Aren't you going to bring your golf clubs? Huh? Your golf clubs. Yeah. Oh.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Sure, they got a lot of left-handed golf club rentals in Tijuana, but if you think I should bring my clubs for the golf trip, well, so be it.
And you know what makes that great? Like most things that you could bring home from Mexico that you don't want to, they just sell the cure at a stand with a guy with a burro with a hat on. You can buy anything. Hey, I got a little nasty rash. Oh, senor, here you go. My burro has this.
Honey, you leaving with the Sixer condoms and the putters, not what I thought about when I was asking you to bring the golf clubs. Oh, yeah.
I think we really helped Matt.
I think we did.
That's a punk-ass question.
Danny, not this Danny. You, Danny, from Sacramento. What is your dilemma?
Well, I've been cheating on my girlfriend with my daughter's mom for probably 6 months now.
Now we're talking!
So contain yourself, Devil. Sorry, Danny.
I apologize.
What's your question for Angel and Devil?
Well, I don't know if I should just break it off with my girlfriend. I don't really love my daughter's mom, but... You know, I'm starting to feel a little guilty. Maybe I should just break it off.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've spoken about this before, my children. What are you getting away with whenever you're thinking about getting away with something, whether it's cheating on your taxes or cheating on your wife or cheating at school? You have a camera. It's called your eyes. It's a surveillance camera. And it sees its own reflection when it looks in the mirror, and it sees the cheater, and it sees the one who's not being true to the girlfriend, and it sees the one who's lying to its coworkers or cheating on the test. That you can never escape. We're so worried about the cops and the surveillance cameras, the principals and the IRS agents, or the wives or the girlfriends. How about you catching you? Isn't that the one person that's most important? Yes, your girlfriend may not find out about your cheating, but you know you're cheating, and you have to live inside your very untrue skin 24/7. That's the reason I would stop. Danny?
The only way you could please me more, if you were cheating on your girlfriend and the daughter and the mom and a cousin and a sister. You are a man of my own lack of heart. Mm. Do you know what else is a camera? I'll tell you what else besides your eyes is a camera.
The one you took a picture of Dean's penis with?
The equipment they use to make the porn that you and I both watch. That's a camera, and that's life. Life should be a James Bond movie with blowing stuff up and then a porno movie with naked chicks. You're not only tagging two chicks. They're related. They both know you. When they're in the same room, don't you tell me you don't feel superior knowing I boned you and I boned you and neither of you know. Not only are you getting double the sex, but you get to lie right to these women's face, and that's always a special pleasure.
Well, there you go, Danny, from putting the sack back in Sacramento, by the way. Good times there, buddy.
Hey, and I just want to say, Teresa, you did real good last night on the water cooler.
Oh, thank you very much for watching, Danny.
Yeah, you were the one guy who...
it's nice to hear all of my fan calling in.
Thank you there, buddy. I give a nice plug at the end of the show.
Sweet.
All right, let's see. One more. Do you guys, let's talk to Adrian up here from Phoenix. Adrian?
Yes?
What is the dilemma, my sweetness?
Well, I have my husband's been in Iraq for about 2 years now, mm-hmm. and his parents recently came to live with me and my children about 4 months ago. And they're driving me absolutely insane. They're in their 80s, and she has Alzheimer's and does just crazy stuff all the time, and it's driving me and my kids nuts.
Now, are they living with you because they think they're taking care of the kids and helping out, or are you taking care of them?
I'm taking care of them. I make all their meals. They were in a group home, and they were really, really unhappy and wanted to leave there. She thought everybody was stealing from her, and now she walks around here. She sometimes forgets to wear clothes. She vacuums without the vacuum cleaner on.
Yeah, give her an A for effort,
wanders
though.
Wanders around the neighborhood.
To see my wife getting that vacuum, even if it wasn't plugged in.
No clothes on. Adrian, are you thinking about taking them back to the home?
They have to go. It's either that or, I mean, they can't live alone.
Now, your husband, I'll get to the angel part in a second, but this is compelling. Your husband, who's in Iraq, what would he say if he said you're going to drop Mammy and Pappy off somewhere?
Well, he says he's going to take care of it when he gets home. He won't be able to stand there for one day.
Mm-hmm.
When is he due back?
He's supposed to come back in May, but let's hope he doesn't have to stay for another 3 months.
Yeah, because he may fall into that category. Well, here goes.
Good luck.
Well, my child, you have what's called a dilemma, and life is filled with them. You know, doing the right thing is not always doing the easiest thing. Oftentimes, it's doing the harder things. Sure, you want to have that delicious cheese Danish, but it's not good for you. You're going to have yourself a little cashy go lean every once in a while, sweetie pea. Why? Not because it tastes good, not because it's satisfying in the moment. It's called delayed gratification. These people are old. They will not be here much longer. But I'll tell you who will be here. You and your memory of how you treated them. That goes on. That is their legacy. That endures. And it's also what your children see. So one day when you're vacuuming in the nude, using a mop to vacuum the carpet, or worse, the dog to vacuum the sofa, your kids are going to take a look and they're going to decide, what should we do with old woman Adrian? Well, we'll cast her aside, throw her to the curb, or we'll do the right thing and take her in. This will be based on what they see Mama do now. So Mama, do the right thing. Wait for the husband to come home. Let him deal with it. It's his parents, and he's going through enough right now. He doesn't need to think about this. Danny?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. Make sure that your husband, who's over there in the 125-degree heat with a 75-pound rucksack on his back, killing people left and right, dodging roadside bombs, make sure he has a problem waiting when he gets home. That he hasn't done enough killing anything that walks in his way because he's afraid it's going to kill him. Make sure he has a problem sitting there waiting the moment he gets off the plane. Adam says you have a dilemma. You don't have a dilemma. They've got dementia. Put them out in the street and tell them they still live there. When my father finally came around right before he died, my sister said, he's asking for you. And I said, he's demented. Tell him I just left. And she did. And he'd say, that's a good boy. I hadn't seen the man in 5 years. And his last words were, that's a good boy. And I went over and I picked up his body and I threw it in the back of the coroner's truck. And off he went thinking, that's a good boy. Now you throw these old-ass, non-memory people out and they won't remember where they were.
Well, there you go, my dear.
Thank you. I like Danny's better.
All right.
Oh,
going
really?
To town.
I thought Adam's was compelling. I mean, Adrian, you don't want your kids to put you out.
Word.
Well, thanks. We will take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to get my wallet out.
You know, if my wife's lawyer is listening to any of this,
it's all a bit.
It's all a bit.
It's yeah. Especially the part where you said it was crazy.
Yeah. And yeah. That I wanted to set Gretchen on fire.
Yeah, I will at least admit it's a bit like a bit.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a bit.
We will take a break. When we come back, a game that is sweeping the nation, gaywalking.
Oh, cool.
Now, you've all seen jaywalking. He hits the streets, talks to people, and try to figure out whether they know the answer or not. Well, we got gaywalking because we're that clever. We took gay board op Bill, pre-op board op Bill, sent him out to the gay part of town, which is any part of town he's in.
Yeah, right.
Right now,
there,
that booth is officially Boys Town. That's right.
Oh, yeah.
And we had him talk to his fellow gays and ask him questions that we thought maybe a straight man could answer, but weren't sure if the gays could do it. We will gamble on their answers. T cleaned up at the beginning. Danny, I think, won the last two. I am now going to be out $100, I believe, if I lose this round. I've not won yet. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with Gay Walking next on the Adam Carolla Show.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show. We sent pre-op board-op Bill out on the streets of Hollywood to ask gay men questions every straight man should know the answer to. It's Gay Walking on the Adam Carolla Show.
All right. I've reluctantly retrieved my 20 from my wallet. Goodbye, my sweet prince. I'll never see you again. I've lost, I believe, 5 or 6 of these. Danny won the last 2, am I right?
I believe so.
Teresa, who grew up in San Francisco, and while is not a, I think they used to call him something that
Hags.
Rhymed with
I'm a friend of the gay man.
And ended up with Hag, yes. That's right. Your friend of Bill, not W, but Bill the Board Op.
I do love Bill the Board Op.
I do, too.
You know, actually, one night I got really drunk and then became a friend of both Bills, if you know what I'm saying.
Now, the...
when you sobered up, you became a friend of Bill W.
For those of you who want to know Bill the Board Op and what his general vibe is like, just imagine that little elf that wanted to be a dentist in the animated Christmas movie or the claymated Christmas thing from it. Imagine that guy doing horrible things to his boyfriend when he got back to his crappy apartment. That's all you need to know about Bill. That I think that's his general vibe. That little elf doing acts that we can't speak of on the radio to his hairdresser boyfriend who doesn't drive. When he gets back to his single apartment.
He's a makeup artist.
King. All right.
Here we go. Bill wants to know if you know all the things straight guys should know. You're homosexuals. It's time for gay walking. Because you are gay. La, la, la,
la, la. I don't know if I'm in love with that song because I was this sort of driving force behind it, or pardon the pun, or I just love that song when Spandau Ballet did it. I can't figure it out, but I'm in love with that song. I'm in love with this bit. I'm growing less attached to this 20 that I brought out as the morning goes on. Do you guys have money? Are you ready to put it up?
I only brought 12 bucks, but I'm good for the rest. I didn't know.
Well, I'm not going to say anything about the stereo. It's a lot of money, by the way. It's a king's ransom for Teresa. All right. We will go to our first question in gay walking.
Whose nickname is the Motor City Madman?
Rock and roll.
Yeah.
A very manly rock and roll.
Yeah. Are we allowed to ask Bill any questions about where he was or the...
Well, I don't know.
No. There's no thumping of his melon. What we can ask is it the same guy?
Does he ask the same guy every question?
Yeah, because if it's the same guy that couldn't get the rock and roll question before, maybe this guy's not going to do that. But we're at the beginning. What do you think, T?
He knows.
He'd say he knows.
Yeah.
The only reason I'm going to go with he knows is cat scratch fever. Mm-hmm. I would think that might have tipped him off because, they might have done a whole little dance. Who knows what they do?
I'm going to say.
Well, wait, I haven't said yet.
Oh.
I'm going to change my mind. I'm saying he's not going to know.
You say not. I'm going with not as well. We're talking about Ted Nugent, I imagine. And I don't think this guy knows the answer. Let's hear.
Whose nickname is the Motor City Madman?
Wolfman Jack?
Oh, no. Getting off to a bad start.
Yeah, but at least he's thinking about it.
All right. That was semi-educated. All right. Oh, for one. One and one. Danny and I go. Let's do the next one.
Who played Ivan Drago in Rocky IV?
I was going to say I've got to come from behind, but I refrained.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't know this.
No, you're going no?
Ah, Dolph Lundgren, pretty cute boy.
That's true. Didn't think about that angle.
6'6", a blonde, muscle all oiled up for those fights, and I'm still going that Dolph Lundgren will throw him name-wise, so no.
I'm going no as well on this one. We all go no. Let's hear the answer.
Who played Ivan Drago in Rocky IV?
Dolph Lundgren.
Danny, you're a savant because you wanted to say he knew it.
I did. I did want to say because he's so pretty. Wow. Which also, I didn't win any money and let out that I'm a little gay for Dolph.
I'll tell you, the gays, they keep you guessing.
Yeah.
They do.
You know what I mean? They keep you on your toes. When you zig, they zag. All right. Well, we all.
If they don't zag, then I'm gay.
Yeah. You could break one of those. We're now T over two. One and one go Danny and I, so we're all tied up. Now to the next question.
What is Chuck Yeager famous for?
All right.
Yeah, because there's the obvious Jägermeister.
Right. Right. T?
I sense a joke is coming. I don't think he knows the answer.
But now let's figure this out. The guy broke the sound barrier.
His book. He did a lot of amazing stuff.
Does Chuck, what if they say test pilot or pilot astronaut?
Do we allow anything that's in the realm?
I personally, having really read that guy's book backwards and forwards because he turns out he's fascinating. He wasn't just the guy that broke the sound barrier. I would accept almost any of those answers because they're all true. Mm-hmm. The guy did amazing things. He took planes that nobody ever, they'd never been flown. So they said, we built this, we think it might fly. And he'd go, okay.
Well, keep in mind, too, we didn't know what happened when you would break the sound barrier. We thought you'd head into a different dimension or you would explode. Oh, we thought the concussion from the sound barrier, and there were a couple of guys. I do believe the son of the de Havilland Air manufacturing company in Britain took his plane, put it into a steep dive, you know, because planes at that time could probably go 500 miles an hour in level flight, the real fast ones.
Right.
You put it in a full dive, maybe you get up to 7 and change, the plane broke apart and he died.
And what do you need, 760 or 780 to break the sound barrier?
Well, I hate to sound like too much of a nerd, but it depends where you are in relation to sea level.
Yeah.
It depends what your elevation
the
is.
The stratosphere has composed.
I
know where the air is thinner.
It's in the lowish sevens, I believe. It's seven.
I consider myself a nerd.
It's like 720 something. The point is does he know who Chuck Yeager is? I will definitely accept pilot. I'll accept test pilot, the man who broke the speed record. But I don't think we'll accept astronaut. Or what about World War II veteran?
No.
Okay.
You're that nerd.
All right, T?
Let me hear Danny's answer first.
My answer is no, he will not know.
I'll stick with no. He will not know.
Hold on. No, no, no.
He looked good in a flight suit back then, though.
I'm going to go no. I think he's going to say astronaut.
I think he's going to say Jägermeister.
Me too.
All right.
What is Chuck Yeager famous for? Chuck Yeager, I'm a pilot. Chuck Yeager broke the sound barrier.
God damn you! A pox! Please. I put on you.
Thank you. I finally got a pox from Adam. I might as well write my Emmy speech.
I'm putting
now.
It on the gauge, but Bonaducci, if you want some of the pox, you're welcome.
I think
to
he's
it.
Got it.
I got enough pox to go around.
As I understand, the Corolla pox makes you rich and famous, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Damn.
All I mean, right, except for Gwen Stefani. I mean, she went nowhere.
That's right. All right, so wait a minute. Teresa, are you 0-3?
Yes. This is why I stopped dating the gays. They always hurt me.
You know, I don't know if there's a... I know there's like a kiss army. I don't know if there's a gay army. But if there is, your major would rip the epaulets off your shoulders and slap you with a glove.
It's true.
A pink glove.
God, I'm sorry.
And dismiss you from the gay
your
army.
Your major malfunction, no.
You gays, I don't know you anymore.
Call yourself an F-hag.
Not anymore.
Pathetic. You make me sick. All right, let's keep going. But now, Danny, what are we?
We're tied with like one right answer, I think.
Yeah, you each have one. I could tie it up right here.
All right, here we go.
James Bond henchman odd job killed people with his what?
Do you know, Teresa?
He killed people with his what? Would he bite him or something?
He threw his hat.
Oh.
He had a bowler.
He threw his hat. He would chop off the heads of statues for no apparent reason. Well, and then in Austin Powers, there's a guy that threw a shoe, but it didn't do anything. And Austin would go, who throws a shoe? What kind of fighting is that?
Right.
Well, I'm going to have to go with... Doesn't know.
I'm going to go absolutely 100% knows. Everybody knows Oddjob threw his hat.
Well, Teresa didn't. And
I didn't.
I've been selling the gays short this whole segment. I'm not going to get burned again. I'm saying he knows. Danny says he knows. I say he knows. Teresa, you're shot to get back or go an unimaginable 0-4 in gay walking. Let's hear the answer.
James Bond henchman Oddjob killed people with his what?
Bowling hat.
Not only a hat, but a bowler hat. He couldn't have known more. Be a spell bowler for you.
T?
What do you call this in sports where you might as well just...
slaughter rule.
Sucking.
Mercy rule?
Gay slaughter rule.
Yeah.
Sorry, if this was a Little League game, it would be stopped.
Right,
in the
cruel.
Fifth inning.
Right, it's
you're
not fun.
Ruining Teresa's self-esteem. It's time to pull her off the mound.
She's borrowing Oddjob's hat right now.
She's going to kill herself with Oddjob's hat. All right. I don't even know if you should be included in this next one, Teresa.
It's just sad.
There is a potential of you going 0-5 here.
I know.
Danny and I are all locked up.
Yeah.
We're 2-2. I've not won. He's won 2 in a row.
Look at the pox fingers he just gave me.
I'll give you the pox finger.
I'm close to a goose egg.
Yes, you are, and you might lose, too.
Let's do it one more. T, you're in on this. Danny, this is a tiebreaker for us. Last question.
After moving from Houston, the Oilers became what team?
The Oilers. Your tiebreaker should be if Teresa knows.
The only thing is they were called the Oilers, so you think they might be interested.
Mm-hmm.
Because they also probably know about the Rams.
Mm-hmm. T, what do you think?
Well, this is what's gotten me into trouble the whole time.
Thinking?
But I'm going to stick with my strategy. He doesn't know. Eventually, even a broken clock is gay twice a day.
Really, it's like you went and interviewed a gay encyclopedia.
Yeah.
These are the smartest gays I've ever heard of. What's going on with the gays?
This is okay. The question is, after moving from Houston?
Bill, what are you at, a gay Mensa meeting? Manza?
I actually went to a... I'm not sure if I can even say the name of the place I went to. It's called Our Job Tuesdays. And you can figure out what the R rhymes with.
Actually. What? Oh, I just got it.
With him.
You know where I went yesterday? FUBAR. You ever been there?
Yeah. That's a good one, too. But I wasn't there.
All right.
This is amazing.
You're going. FUBAR is the gayest bar on Santa Monica Boulevard.
You're going.
Doesn't know.
Doesn't know. Danny?
I'm going doesn't know. I don't know.
I would like to break the tie and say does know, but I don't feel he's going to know, so I'm going doesn't know. We have a tiebreaker question. That's the only reason I'm going with you on this. We go doesn't know. Does Teresa go on 0-5 and gay walking?
After moving from Houston, the Oilers became what team?
Oh, I should know this one. Houston Oilers.
Houston Oilers. See, I don't like the people in the background hearing.
I'm like, I watched the halftime show at the Super Bowl.
Who did for halftime?
Saints. Is it the San Diego Saints?
Now, that's
I'm
the,
back.
That's the gays I'm talking about.
Yeah. I'm on the
San
boards.
Diego Saints. Well, you're now 1-4. Danny and I, are 3-2. And now the tiebreaker. T.
Yeah.
Slide your stool back.
Does that happen on Our Job Tuesdays?
Slide the stool back, and you will not participate in this one. We have a tiebreaker for just such an occasion. Can you find it,
yeah,
Brian?
Here it is.
Let's hear it.
Heads or tails?
Okay, that's it?
Yes.
Right, we're being given weird signals over here.
No.
Heads or tails?
That's the whole question?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you guys stayed up nights working on this one.
Mm-hmm. That's what we came down to. Well, it was my fault
you
for saying...
You all earned your pay right now.
Mike, think of a clever tiebreaker, like heads or tails. I think that's what happened.
Okay, we have a problem here, because as soon as I give my answer, it's going to make such perfect sense. For what Mo is not going to pick tails?
Well,
I've heard a lot of the folks pick heads. I'm going to go with heads. Danny goes with tails. Wow. Does he win a third week in a row? Am I out $100 in gay walking? Answer, please.
Heads or tails?
Oh, my God, tails.
Not just tails, my friend, but, oh my God, tails, just like I said he would.
Danny has been running this board. This is his third week.
I've been running Bill.
Gay walking.
Because you are gay.
Gay. La, 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 la.
I missed the Chuck Yeagermeister joke, but I didn't miss the tails joke.
Oh, you ate more bucks.
Cleaning me out. I suggest you take a good long look in the gay mirror. Because I don't think you're going to like what you see, Missy.
I know.
Remember, cameras are eyes or something.
That's right. You are woefully off. Tiebreaker and out 3 weeks in a row.
You know what's funny? That I won this money at gay walking and just played Devil Danny because I just asked my wife for money because she couldn't go to church on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So I tithe the $300 I had on me. So I have no money. So it's funny that I now have money from winning a gay game and being the devil.
Well, you give 10% of that gay blood money to the church. Well, that's the way it works.
Tithing's a little strong word when you get up into the 10% word.
We will take ourselves a break. Hold on. Let me see if I can find out what's going on here. Ah, Perez Hilton.
Oh.
Where was he a minute ago?
I do believe he's out of the closet. Perez Hilton, the Gossip Queen, next on The Adam Carolla Show.
The Adam Carolla Show with Adam Carolla, Teresa Strasser, and Danny Bonaducci.
Well, Miss Hilton, you must be worth $1 trillion. Get the feeling that you don't
give a Miss Hilton, I like the way you push and glide. On the skates, on the social butterfly.
It's time to dish the dirt.
I'll give you an exclusive that I haven't even posted on the site.
With the reigning queen of Hollywood gossip. Get more at PerezHilton.com.
This is an outrage!
Perez Hilton is on the Adam Carolla Show.
I'm going to use a little reverse psychology. I pray that Perez Hilton is up the street. He's on his cell phone, and we have a horrible connection. Perez?
No, I'm on a landline.
Yes! That's what I love about you, girl.
I'm up far, far away. I'm in London right now.
Ooh. Are you really?
I am.
What are you doing over there?
Prince William.
I'm whoring myself out to the British media. Yep.
Well, they must love you because they love their gossip over
they
there.
They do. I'm so excited. Like, I've been doing tons of press, and the most exciting thing for me is I read this magazine called OK.
Yes, mm-hmm.
The UK version every week. Mm-hmm. And it's really different than the American version, and they just did this huge photo shoot with me. It took 10 hours, and we did, like, 6 different setups, and it was just a lot of fun, and I love it, and I can't wait to come out.
They love the queen. They love gossip. They love Perez Hilton.
And I'm a little dangerous. I was on a TV show here this past weekend, and I made a joke. I called the queen a big fat dyke.
Well, that's always a funny joke.
Nice.
I thought it was funny.
It's good times,
they almost, like, stopped the show. It didn't go over very well.
Well, it's a weird society because on one hand they're prim and proper. On the other hand, they go nuts for all the tabloid stuff and all the gossip stuff. It's a weird sort of make up your mind, which one are you kind of society. Like here, we go nuts for the gossip too, but we're walking around in jeans and flip-flops. You guys are wearing suits with vests and you have pocket watches and you go nuts for the gossip.
Plus, here you could call the president a big fat queen and everybody go, yeah, okay, whatever, next question. You got to remember that the royal family goes back a long time. Before they were the Windsors, they were the... Who are they? Well, their name sounded too German, and they didn't like it, so they changed it, and I can't remember what it was at the time.
How are you doing, Danny?
I'm doing really well, thank you.
Do you feel like you have the VH1 curse or the MTV curse?
No, I really don't. I feel like my wife has not loved me since the affair and was hoping when I got sober she could forgive me, and she goes, hey, I can't forgive you. It turns out I don't love you anymore and haven't for years.
Well, Perez, you had to put on your... You had to cover that Danny was getting a divorce?
I don't even know if I did.
What?
Did I?
It's gossip. No. It's Hollywood. It's news. And what is the MTV curse?
I feel like I may have it. One of those reality shows and just getting divorced.
Yeah, I'm getting a divorce.
Carmen and Dave, right. Jessica and Nick.
I feel, I'll tell
the
you,
Markers.
If you want a real life quote on this, I feel like the woman of my dreams is leaving me and there's nothing I can do to stop her.
Well, speaking of women of your dreams, Perez. Yeah,
back to the chicks on MySpace.
I mean, look at the Barkers, Travis Barker and Shayna Mochler. They got back together.
That's what they say. Is that true?
Yeah, no, they're definitely back together.
See, there's hope, Danny.
Mm-hmm.
He just looked at me.
I'm not sure exactly where I stand anymore.
They don't seem like the best and the brightest. I would be scared if they had a kid, it would just come out a Duraflame log. I really don't know that there's a brain to share between the two of them. And I know Travis and him, but not the sharpest
have
guy.
Children.
And is it in a yellow wrapper? And says,
but can I ask Perez about somebody who's not British, but British adjacent?
Sure.
And that is Madonna. Is there trouble between Madonna and Guy Ritchie?
Well, that's what the British press are saying, and they actually have been saying that for a while now. You know, Madonna's in Malawi.
Mm-hmm.
The emphasis is on the we for me.
Yeah.
Malawi. Mm-hmm. And some people are claiming she's there to adopt another baby, but her spokesperson denies that and says she's just there to oversee the building of a new, I think, orphanage or some project that she's overseeing. Plus, she's filming a documentary of her experience there. Because she's, you know, trying to be all Angelina Jolie activist, humanitarian. But somebody who's not with Madonna on this trip is her husband, Guy Ritchie.
Well, don't you guys think that once the bloom was off the Madonna rose, I mean, once you... at first, it'd be like, oh, my God, I'm dating Madonna. Oh, my God, I'm humping Madonna. Oh, my God, I'm getting married to Madonna. But 5 years in, it'd be like, this broad is a royal pain in the ass. And she just seems like a ball buster with a motor that won't quit. She's like the ever ready bunny of ball busters. And after I got my bass drum beaten one too many times from that witch, I would eventually move on. Doesn't it seem like he would eventually do that just like everyone else in her life?
Well, they have been together quite a while now, like over 5 years. So maybe it just ran its course like it did with Kate Middleton and Prince William.
Well, you have a blind item on your site that's obviously about Jennifer Lopez.
I cannot reveal who that is about.
Well, what is the story?
I don't want to get sued. So I did a blind item about this A-list diva who has converted to Scientology, even though she's denied it, and she's been kind of, as what happens with all of them, because I actually know people that have gone to Scientology, once they go into that church, they slowly start to cut off everyone not involved in it from their lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's going on with her and Mark Anthony? I heard there was trouble in paradise.
Well, they're suing the National Enquirer over false stories that Mark was somehow involved with, like, some heroin ring or something shady like that. But, yeah, there have also been reports that, you know, he's really controlling and that they're possibly on the road to a divorce, that they have denied that as well.
Mm-hmm. Has he converted to Scientology?
I don't know, but that could be one of... Oh, my gosh! That could be one of the things that is causing a rift between them.
Can I tell you, Perez, you're not doing your credibility a lot of good when Teresa comes up on a whim and you go, oh, my God! That's it!
Perez, he doesn't need credibility. He owns credibility.
I just knew what my source was saying. I mean, my source didn't mention... Well, anyways, I didn't say what my blind
eye
was.
You know there's trouble, and you know that you have a source telling you that J-Lo...
Well, not just one, actually, more than one person, but I was kind of trepidatious to even go there with just one person talking to me.
What is the definition of a blind item?
It's basically you don't mention their name because you don't want to get sued or anything
But you say somebody in Hollywood who doesn't want to be known as Jenny from the Block anymore
He calls her Picante. That was my clue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking about becoming a Scientologist.
Well, who else, Perez? I mean, what else is going on in gossip land?
Well, there, like I mentioned earlier, at least here in the UK, everyone is talking about, and I think in America too, everyone's talking about Prince William and
Kate Middleton,
who broke up. Mm-hmm. And the crazy thing is that nobody really knows why it happened, which I think is a good thing because like you can't really blame it on somebody cheating or this or that or the other,
right?
They're just young, and they were dating for 5 years, and there's like 30 different accounts as to what happened.
Well, sometimes nothing happens. It's just you've been together and you grow apart. Do you think that's true, or do you think there's something to get
to? Well, definitely grew apart, because he has actually been spending a lot of time doing military training, and he's going to be going abroad, because all the royals are expected to serve time in the British Armed Forces.
Mm-hmm. But it wasn't one of these things where you were sitting here stateside, heard about this, realized something was awry, stood up and yelled, to the Miata!
But Perez, American Idol is on tonight. Please tell me you know anything we don't about Sanjaya.
Sanjaya was voted Maxim Magazine's Girl of the Day today.
Oh, that's so funny.
Which I think is a big honor for him. And actually, this is true. Oh, my God, you guys should do this, too. I had a radio station, like a random radio station, I think in Chicago, email me saying that they were going to offer Sanjaya $10,000 to co-host the show with them for a week if he gets voted off. You guys should pony
pray
it up.
That doesn't happen, Bonaducci.
What?
That's how I got started.
That's how Bonaducci got started. That's exactly how I got started.
Really?
It was a bit. It was a dare.
You made the news for beating up a tranny.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was in radio by then. I made the news for getting arrested for blow.
Uh-huh.
You beat up trannies before, too?
One tranny. And by the way, just so you know, in case you care on a personal level, this guy was going to get his ass beat no matter what he was wearing. He was a jerk.
And Perez...
had nothing to do with his outfit.
Perez, there's only a 50-50 chance you knew him.
Okay.
He's a Phoenix streetwalker, a guy with the class of Perez.
All right, make it 60-40.
Well, before we let Perez go back to his insulting of the royal family, Danny, do you want to give Perez an exclusive for PerezHilton.com on your situation?
Well, he already gave me a bunch.
I did?
Well, you can give me another one.
No, I didn't know that I did, but that's cool. I don't know what to say. The honest truth is, you know, I make a lot of jokes on the radio show. The honest truth is my wife is leaving me, and I don't want her to. I am being divorced. I am not getting divorced.
All right, Perez.
Well, that happens. People get divorced.
Yes, they do.
Are divorced from.
Dude, it's not like I'm letting a lot of grass grow under my feet. God, you know what? You and I have one thing in common, the web. Mm-hmm. I was lonely for about 6 seconds, and then I hit MySpace.
Well, speaking of
your... You're not lonely anymore?
Dude, they should call this thing My Whore.
Perez.
That's your story, Perez. You lead with MySpace becomes My Whore, the Bonaducci story.
Yeah, Danny Bonaducci, MySpace Whore. Well, MySpace Man.
Perez, let's talk about your space.
Okay.
The space between your legs. What's going on with you? Do you have a man? How does this work? You know, you're a celebrity. You report on...
I'm not a celebrity.
The love life of other celebrities. What about your own love life?
I don't have a love life.
You don't? You don't have a special man?
No. I travel too much.
Remember when we talked last time and you said you were going to start working out and find a man?
LA. I don't want to talk about it.
Oh. I'll work out with you.
Come on, I'll work out.
I'm an actual certified trainer. I'll work out with you.
Let's deploy.
There's so much about you I didn't know.
I've never trained anybody. I've never taken a client. I bought a gym, and I thought any business you own, you should be able to put a plaque on the wall that says you deserve to own it. Mm-hmm. Because if I owned a hair salon, I would do the required 1,600 hours to become a hairstylist. I bought a gym, and I did the 6 months it took to become a personal certified trainer.
Mm-hmm. You still have your gym?
No. I'm a bad businessman, good trainer.
Hey, Perez.
Yes.
You know what you should do? You should have Danny train you, get you into shape, and then T will set you up.
I'd be afraid he'd beat me up.
I would not beat you up. I would kiss you.
He'll get you into shape, possibly give you a hep C, and then T will go out with you because she knows the gays, and she'll set you up.
What do you think, you and me at the Abbey on a Sunday morning?
I love the Abbey. What a great place. I swear to God, it's one of my favorite bars in the world.
That sounds like a plan.
Perez,
sleep on it, my brother. And thanks for the report, and thanks for being on a landline. And when are you going to be back in the States? Because I feel empty without you. I really do. I feel like we're missing our most valuable citizen.
And if anybody's going to fill you up, it's going to be Perez.
I'm back tomorrow, but I go to Vegas this weekend for Gwen Stefani, so that should be fun.
As long as you stay inside of our borders, I'll be fine. But I'm going to hold my breath until you get back to L.A.
All right.
Perez Hilton, everyone. PerezHilton.com is where you go. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll do the news. T?
Well, we're, of course, going to give you the latest updates out of Virginia on the Virginia Tech story. And also, who is going to be the next host of The Price is Right? Big news on that front.
Bob Barker did for like 50 years, right. And now they got to get someone else. Oh, yeah. Danny, maybe it's me or you.
Maybe.
Quick break. Back with that after this. Well, T.
Yes.
Time for the news.
Teresa Strasser, the number one Jewish news reporter on this station right now.
Police have identified the gunman who carried out the deadliest school shooting in American history as a 23-year-old Korean national named Cho Sung-hui. He is a resident alien in the United States. And this morning, Steve Flaherty, the superintendent of Virginia State Police, gave a press conference, and here's some of what he had to say.
Victims were found in at least four classrooms as well as a stairwell. We know that there were a number of heroic events that took place, students and faculty alike, within minutes of this tragedy unfolding. The gunman was discovered among several of the victims in one of the classrooms. He had taken his own life.
Police are saying that first there was a shooting at around 7:15 a.m. in a dorm. It then moved on. And now, obviously, news is unfolding every minute. Fox News is reporting that this gunman, Cho, left behind a note after the shooting in the dormitory. And they're saying in the note, he railed against debauchery and rich kids at the university. So I'm sure we'll be hearing more about that.
Yeah. A couple of things. Did he chain the doors shut?
Yeah, they're saying he chained them from the inside so that police couldn't get in during his rampage.
How many doors need to be chained shut from the inside before we redesign the panic bar that's on the edge of every door? Where essentially they're 4 inches apart and a foot of bike chain is all it takes to make the dorm room, the class, the whatever, seemingly impenetrable because the doors open out. They're heavy duty, and when they're chained together, you just can't do anything about it. How many of these get chained together before somebody does the panic bar that has an open end on that side? Be like the brakes on a 10-speed. Just leave the side open. You have to have panic bars on these doors because when a whole crowd of people hit it in a fire, instead of mashing up against it and not having the door open because the guy can't twist the knob, they hit the panic bar and the door goes open and everyone spills out to the outdoors where they can breathe. But how many of these got to get chained together before we invent one that isn't built like a U-hook?
Well, it seems reasonable, and I don't know if you remember, but there was legislation a while back about trunk hoods because people would get locked in the trunk.
Yeah.
And someone was saying there should be a latch or a means of getting out from the inside.
I remember that.
Every car that's manufactured now has a pull cord that you can get at, although I'm sure my ass would be pressed against it while I withered in the hot sun when I'm locked in the trunk of a vehicle. Every single one of them has a pull cord and escape hatch. You pop this thing and it'll pop the trunk. I have a $200,000 Ferrari that has one in the trunk, and I always stare at it and think, really? You know how many of these cars they made? Under 300.
Really?
Under 300, and it has to have the little. And I thought, what are the chances? As a matter of fact, it would be an honor for you to be locked in the trunk of this car.
You should be so lucky.
I should charge people $10 to be locked in the trunk of my Ferrari. But there it is. And it's not in the trunk. It's in the front. And there's not enough room to fit anybody in there because it's as big as my fist.
Right.
But still,
I can still get it.
Had to make the hatch to pull it. And probably tacked another $200 onto the price of the car.
Well, there was so much confusion when this story began to break yesterday because there seemed to be, at one point, it looked as though there were two separate shootings. There was a shooting in the dorm. There was a shooting in Norris Hall. It was unclear whether there were two shooters, whether there were one. Now it seems pretty obvious. Most authorities think that there was one guy.
It seemed obvious to everyone with two brain cells to rub together immediately that these things were connected. I don't know why it takes everything so long. Here's the deal. We take a long time sorting everything out because we're scared of erroneous information, yet all we get is erroneous information. So why not go out on a limb with this one, too?
It would seem an unbelievable coincidence for there to be two shootings within 2 hours of each other in the same university.
Was there not a human being in that dorm that saw anything after he started the shooting in the dorm? Don't you know the guys who live in the dorm with you? Didn't he live in that dorm, or was that an erroneous story?
I think they are reporting that he did. He was a resident of that dorm. But there's so much chaos, and it's hard to get confirmation on, and, you know, news sources will move forward without it, as you well know. Mm. This is coming from the police in Virginia. Lab results have confirmed that one of the two weapons seized in Norris Hall was used in both shootings. In other words, either the Glock 9mm or the .22 caliber, based on forensic evidence, was used in both shootings, making it pretty much a fait accompli that this was the same shooter.
Right. 2 hours later, it's just, you know, and I don't know how you lock down a campus. It's real easy just to sit there and make these broad exclamations of, they should have locked the campus down. What does that mean, lock the campus down? I don't know if they have a way. Well, they should have got, well, what would that have done? I mean, I would assume anyone who killed anyone in the dorm was heading the other direction in a hurry, not heading to another part of campus to conduct a slaughter.
Sure. And one interesting aspect of the story is that what they did do was send out an email to all of the students telling them to stay away from windows and that there might be a hazard on campus. That's something that wouldn't have happened probably 5 years ago.
The moral of the story is we ask why, and there's no why. There's just, right. It just is. You know, why were, it's sad as a society, we want to know how to prevent it the next time. Right. I don't think we can prevent it the next time. I don't know that you might be able to lessen it with education. I think telling everyone to comply, and that's all we've ever done. I mean, we've been fed a steady diet in this country of law enforcement experts explaining what to do. And the answer to what to do, comply, do what they say. If they march you into a room, go into the room. They tell you to get on the floor. Do not agitate them. Don't be a hero. Don't try to get the gun away. Don't do anything brave. Well, maybe it's time to revise that.
Right.
Now, if you saw footage where you heard a gun firing, you probably saw footage that was taken from a camera phone. A student named Jamal Albert Goody from Virginia Tech had his camera phone. He captured.
Can I ask you quickly, is there anyone involved with the shooting whose name we can pronounce?
Right.
is there one Bob Johnson in the
this
mix?
This is a tough one.
This is a tough one. Because thank God for the killer and the killer's family, because he's going to be known as the killer. Charles Manson was an easy one.
Yes.
He'll be known as the gunman or the killer because nobody will be able to pronounce
that
kid's name.
I can still say John Mark Carr. That was an easy one. I can still say Zacharias Moussaoui. This story is a tough one.
Yes. Yes, it is on many levels.
Jamal Al-Barghouti took this camera phone footage. Now, I'm going to play you some of him talking about how he got the footage. He was on our show earlier this morning, but he was also on all of the news channels last night. And in the background, you can hear him describing what he saw. And they're playing the footage, so you can hear gunshots, et cetera, in the background. Here is Jamal Al-Barghouti explaining how and why he used his camera phone.
I was just going to campus to talk to my advisor, but then I started hearing people telling me to leave. So I was on campus around 10 o'clock. I took that decision when I saw a policeman taking off his gun and started looking for a target to shoot. I knew that this isn't another bomb threat because we had two last week.
Jeez.
So I knew this is something way more serious. It was then when I decided to use my camera.
Well, speaking of cameras, aren't there going to be surveillance cameras?
One would think.
And then here's the other thing, too. There will be some surveillance camera footage, I'm sure. I'm sure the stuff will be very hard to watch and very gruesome. But there'll be a certain segment of society that will find it and stare at it on the internet. And I will not be amongst their ranks. I'm not interested in it. Don't want to know about it.
Did you see Daniel Pearl?
No.
Me either. Boy, did I like the plague.
I got enough sewage running around in my brain to last me a lifetime. I don't need to see 19-year-olds slaughtered every time I close my eyes.
Absolutely. Well, today at 2 o'clock, there's going to be a memorial service in Virginia. President Bush and the First Lady are expected to be there. 32 dead in Virginia, and also the gunman, 33. At Virginia Tech.
Well,
very sad day.
As I was saying in the 7 o'clock hour, I think it's time to revise our strategy into the more proactive strategy when it comes to being a hostage. As I said earlier, if you're in a bank and everyone tells you, and the gunman comes and tells you get on the ground, then you get on the ground and you sit there and hold your breath for 45 seconds until he cleans out the register, cleans out the vault or whatever it is, and he's back on his way to score some crack.
Right.
Or if that happens at a convenience store, you do the same thing. But if you're in a school and you're in a church and you're in a place where there's no cash register and somebody comes in and he's not telling people, give me your watch or give me your wallet, he's just rounding people up. Well, then maybe it's time for a different strategy, because the strategy is not get shot. That's the strategy. And when the guy wants the money, then the only way to get shot is to get between him and the money. But when the guy wants to shoot you, the only way not to get shot is the bum rush.
Right. You might as well, because you're in danger in any case.
And I think, as bizarre as it sounds, and as much as we always do this thing where do not be a hero, don't do this and don't do that. Well, we're living in a different time, and we're living in a time where terrorists take over airplanes and insane people go into classrooms. And maybe it's time to tell the students and tell the passengers and tell the whoever else who isn't in a bank and there's no cash register involved. Look, if you're being rounded up and it looks like a terrorist situation, or you just have some madman or some disgruntled employee, maybe someone ought to pick up a coffee mug and chuck it at his head and you all go for it.
Well, it's always an awkward transition to go from a terrible, sad, tragic massacre to the rest of the news.
Well, I think what we should do is digest it for a moment and then come back and finish that off.
That sounds good.
All right. So, T.
Yes.
Would you give a little tease as to what will be in the next of the news or the rest of the news?
Well, I'm going to tell you who is in the running to become the Price is Right host. It's down to three people. Getting very close,
really?
And they're going to announce in May. And also, is chocolate better than making out?
All right.
Hard hitting.
Combine my two loves and put a little chocolate on your partner. I freak you out, T?
I was disturbed and yet oddly titillated.
All right. Speaking of titillated, got some peanut butter here. We'll take a quick break. Be right back for the rest of the news after this.
Hey, Adam.
Adam Carolla is putting two people behind bars at Alcatraz Island for one night. Think you got what it takes to survive a little sleepover? Go to AdamCarolla.com and tell us why you should be sentenced. If you're chosen, you got a chance to compete for $2,500. Details at AdamCarolla.com and your accommodations at Alcatraz, courtesy of The Condemned, starring Steve Austin in theaters April 27th. Let's get back to the Ace Man on the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, forget about the Ace Man. What about the T-Girl with the rest of the news?
Song or no song?
Nah.
No song? Okay, well, some happy news for Regis Philbin.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, he underwent triple bypass surgery about just over a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
He called into his show, Regis and Kelly, and he told her that his sexual dry spell is over. It had been 3 months because of his health trouble. And now, according to him, he is seeing action about 5 times a week.
Jeez.
Yes.
That's not bad.
Yes, for a 75-year-old man. Furthermore, he's saying that he will be back. Here is Regis calling in.
Well, you know, the doctors tell me that after 6 weeks, I can come back. And so the day after 6 weeks is Thursday, April 26th. It'd be 6 weeks and a day since I had this thing done to me. And I guess that's the time I'm coming back.
So live with Regis and Kelly, we'll be back with Regis and Kelly.
How long does it take to get back to work when your job involves sitting and reading out of a newspaper?
It's a good point.
I mean, it's not like he's going back to the docks to man the forklift or the pallet jack. He's going to sit. He's doing the same thing at home that he'd be doing for his work, just sitting and talking, right?
Yeah, it is. It was triple bypass surgery.
How miserable is his wife?
Joy. Her name's Joy.
This guy was this close to kicking off. I was going to get a nice fat insurance check and ride out the rest of my life island hopping. Instead, I got this old codger who's got a new life breathed into his penis, and I'm right in its crosshairs.
And I'm doing the resuscitation.
All you want is a guy who smells of Grecian formula, just humping you like a chihuahua on a throw pillow.
It's a nice image. Richly hued description of what goes on at the Philbin household.
I just know there's no 70-year-old woman that wants it 5 times a week from Regis.
I don't know any girl that really wants it five times a week after a year or two.
I'm just saying, Regis with a Woody and a new lease on life? Holy Christ.
Well, there's a lot of talk about who's going to take over for Bob Barker when he steps down from The Price is Right.
I think I got an answer.
Who do you think?
Don Imus? Come on. Do the math. He's old.
He is free.
He's free and he's old.
I feel like if he hosts The Price is Right, there's going to be a lot of anti-Semitic humor. You know what I'm saying?
Tom Selleck.
It's free the Jew and the black chick and whatever you... What are you, Lee? Whatever. Mexican? Refreshing. Let's see. We got a piggy bank. It's a black guy throwing a nickel into a top hat's turn of the century. What do you, brother, that's right. That's right, with the nappy hair. What do you, $1.99, shrewd.
Here's actually who's in the running. George Hamilton.
Who?
Yeah, the tan guy.
I love George. He's great.
Mark Steinis.
He's great,
you know.
And he is our Zsa Zsa Gabor, because when I would ask my parents, what the hell does this chick do?
Yeah.
They'd go, don't worry about it. She's a celebrity. I feel like when my kids are going to ask me, what the hell does George Hamilton do? I'll just go, he's our Zsa Zsa Gabor. He's our celebrity. He's a celebrity because he's a celebrity.
Mark Steinis is the second guy in the running. He's from Entertainment Tonight.
No,
E.T.
No.
And the third guy is a guy you might never have heard of. Oddly enough, I've worked with him at the Game Show Network. He's a guy named Todd Newton. He used to be on E! All the time,
yeah.
Coming Attractions.
I know he is.
Well, here's the thing about Todd. For years, he's been hosting a live version of The Price is Right, which they do in Vegas. It's
in
very
his
successful.
Bathroom? Oh, in Vegas?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll find out in mid-May.
He's going to have to change his name. To Chaz or Zip or something.
Todd.
A Todd. Hey, I'm Todd. Todd's a horrible name for a game show host.
Todd Newton, though, it has
thanks,
a different
name. Thanks, Todd. No.
I don't mind it.
I don't like it.
If he had a different last name, it would suck, but the Newton thing kind of throws it a little flair.
Change his first name to Huey. Maybe we can talk.
He has been doing the live version for years, and so it'll be interesting to see if he steps in. And lastly, I'll get to this quickly. They've done a study in London. And they wanted to find out
why their teeth are so bad.
Right. No, they wanted to find out if chocolate gives you a better buzz than making out.
Mm-hmm.
So for the study, volunteers wore heart monitors. They had electrodes attached to their heads. They put a piece of chocolate on their tongues, and then the researchers monitored their bodies for reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were instructed to passionately kiss their partners, and their reactions were measured a second time.
Regis had to go over there and do something to them. Yes.
No. So they compared chocolate melting on your tongue versus making out passionately with your partner. Here's what happened. For both sexes, at the point where the chocolate started to melt on the tongue of these people, their brains became intensely stimulated. In fact, more so than when they were kissing. Up to four times more stimulation in the brain from chocolate than from kissing.
Wow.
I know.
Both sexes.
Both
You'd
sexes.
You'd say, well, no. Women got more stimulation from the chocolate, but the guys got more stimulation from making out. Although making out with your partner is no holiday if you've been with your partner for 10 years. Doing other things with your partner is fine. But the making out part, no big thrill for most guys.
But what they didn't mention is they were eating that naked chocolate Jesus.
Oh, really?
Oh, right.
They had the nasty parts.
They're eating like
not
a stone.
Not that Jesus had a nasty part. I mean, I'm sure they're all nice.
Well, chocolate also increased people's heart rates more than kissing did.
Give me a break.
So if you're all alone, just have yourself some chocolate. I'm Teresa Strasser, and that's the news.
Give me a break.
This is Teresa Strasser with the real news. CNN.
Does Lean Cuisine make a chocolate entree, or do they make cats and chocolate? These are the questions I need answered.
That's the holy trinity of my Friday nights.
We need to take a break. Come back. I will share my thoughts on this Virginia Tech thing. We've been hearing a lot of news and a lot of technical stuff, but let's talk about the psychological side of this, how it affects us, what we can do, how we deal with it without spiraling into depression. We'll try to make some sense of it next on the Adam Carolla Show.
You're listening to the Adam Carolla Show. Wipe the book out your eye and brush your teeth and turn your radio on.
All right, well, some final thoughts on this whole Virginia Tech thing. Before I get philosophical, let's talk brass tacks for a second. You know, whenever a tragedy like this happens, everyone's a hero. Everyone did all they could do, and it's a senseless tragedy. But I don't know. I feel like the cops could do a better job in these situations. Now, we're trying to figure out a timeline. But I watched the news for about an hour and saw guys hiding behind trees and hiding behind squad cars for a good solid hour before they went in there. Now, here's my take on the whole thing. And again, with the timeline, which we don't know about yet, but we talked to a student who used his cell phone to take a film of what was going on. And you heard shots in the background. Now, as you heard shots in the background, he said cops were running past him. But they couldn't get in, or they took cover, or they chose not to go in, or whatever it is. Here's the way I look at it. I don't want firemen showing up to the apartment building, have me up on the fifth floor with the kids, and have them say, let's wait it out in the fire truck until the fire goes out. It's too dangerous to go in there. And then we'll go up and get Carolla's charred remains. No time for backup. Remember that one? Right. I want you in. Now, here's the way I look at it. If you're a cop, especially if you're a Virginia cop, there's a good chance you might make it through your whole career without drawing your gun and firing it.
Right.
You may make it through your whole career without getting shot at. You may make it through your whole career without ever having to be in a situation like this, and you probably won't, and you probably will make it through your whole career that way, and you'll never be in a situation like this. But I apply the same thing I apply to the Army with the cops in these situations, which is, a lot of people sign up for the Army and they go, well, I'll get free medical and dental for the rest of my life. I'll get the GI Bill. I'll learn how to be a jet mechanic and I'll get free college. But once in a while, a war breaks out. And then everyone gets pissed off. Hey, I didn't sign up for this. I know you signed up for free medical and dental and low interest loans for the rest of your life. But so what? There's a war. It's bad timing. Now get on the C-130 transport. We're sending you into a hot zone. I feel the same way with the cops. And I know it's horribly politically incorrect to bring this up, but I'm going to anyway. If you hear gunshots coming from a student union or coming from a dorm room or coming from a classroom, buddy, you got to go in. Yeah. I'm sorry. You can't hide behind your car waiting to suss things out, waiting to see if there's a second gunman, waiting for backup. No time for backup. This guy is executing people in there, and he can kill a couple people every couple of minutes, and I want you through that door. And I don't care if you got to shoot out the window and go through it. I want you in. Now, there's a good chance you'll never experience this in your career, just like as a fireman, you may never experience a fire where someone's trapped on the fifth floor. And as an enlisted man, you may never get into a hot zone and go into a war zone. But you know what? If it does come up, well, you signed up for it, and it's time to go in. And I don't want any more Columbine situations. I don't want any more of these situations, Virginia Tech, where everyone surrounds the building where the slaughter's taking place.
Right.
I want proactive movement, and I want you to revise your training for this, which is if it's a slaughter situation, it's not a hostage situation, it's an execution situation, then the first guy there is going in.
I agree with you completely because I have a hero complex. I not only want the first guy to go in, I want to be the first guy. I have a real problem there. The problem, specifically the way things are worked and the way people are trained, you burst into a hostage situation, you most likely shoot a hostage. Happens every time.
Sure.
Happens every time. Once one of our guys kills a hostage, they renegotiate how they handle the hostage situation. When you start spraying the room and people bust in and shoot anything moving, what you have is more casualties possibly than they could have known they were going to have. Nobody, since the biggest one in history, could have imagined this guy was going to massacre 31 people. So they thought they'd sit it out, they'd get their negotiator. Yes. Now I'm with Adam completely. I want somebody rushing in that room and shooting that bastard dead.
Well,
okay, I'm with you completely, but I'm telling you, their thought theory is
I understand.
We'll kill the hostages. He might have a bomb.
And, of course, I don't blame those who were on the scene, but I do say it's time to revisit the tactics. We didn't think it was possible for people to blow themselves up.
Right.
20 years ago, the idea was we'll look for a suspicious package that's left unattended. We didn't think women would be putting vests, explosive vests on themselves and blowing themselves up in crowded marketplaces. But you know what? Now they do. Now we need a revised tactic for that. And I feel the same way with this. If the first guy on the scene can suss out the fact that it's not a hostage situation, but it's an execution situation, then he's got to go in guns blazing. And yep. If he shoots a couple of kids on the way, sorry, so be it. It's still better than 32 dead. All right, we need to take a break. We'll be back after this. Well, just enough time left. I know.
Remarkable show today, though.
I thought,
I mean, not to compliment ourselves, but to point out just in general that I thought we did a really good show while Adam made sure to pay the, and Teresa gave the information on a very serious subject while still being able to put on a fun show. I commend you guys, and I guess me too.
Thank you, Danny. And you never know. It's happened. I mean, I remember doing Columbine and Loveline and a few other situations like that. And yeah, and I think the best you can do is just be truthful and, be serious when it's time to be serious and laugh when it's time to laugh. With that said, we have just enough time left for a little bit and we don't always get to called. So what have we learned? Well, we've learned that she's a woman first, and my mom second. Okay.
Freak out!
We've learned that if you got an extra $10, you can come down to the Corolla house, and I'll lock you in the trunk of my Ferrari. Best $10 you ever spent in your life. And finally, we've learned that as we speak, Regis is on top of poor 80-year-old Joy. Like a chihuahua on a throw pillow.
Good times.
I want to thank Rod Stewart's kid for coming in here.
Sean,
that's right. Sean Stewart. I don't have
he
my
continues
car in front
to get
of me.
His ass kicked, but gets
Sons
it back
of
up
Hollywood
and fight.
On A&E,
everybody.
Jamal with the cell phone.
Ah, Jamal,
Albert
who was
Hoodie.
On the scene at the tragedy at the massacre. And again, it's not called a tragedy. It was a massacre. It was a tragedy, but this tragedy is when a tree crushes a bunch of people. This is at the hands of a human being, and we should always remember that. We'll take a extendo break, and until next time, this is Adam Carolla saying mahalo.
No condom, no sex.